Hello, is there any...
Talk Sheep.
Recorded live.
Hello, this is William Fink, and it is Thursday, January 7th, and this is the first and experimental Chris Degenia European Fellowship call. Hello, June. Hello, Chris. How you doing? You still have some feedback, Chris, on your... It's terrible right now, actually.
Hang on a minute.
I'm getting it on mine as well, actually.
Well, yeah, it's Chris's, it's a combination of his laptop and his phone causing feedback.
Yes.
And it's really terrible. And I've spoken to him with him on his laptop before, and it's never happened. But.
No. Oh, no, I know it. It's usually very good.
Hello? Only now when it's important. Chris,
it's
just
still
terrible.
There, Chris.
Is there?
Yes.
My fax machine, well, let me see if I can switch that off. Maybe I'll pull the plug.
Well, hopefully we'll have something to talk about. I mean, I had hoped at least a few people showed up, but it's, I know it's not
that's any better
every night, but...
No. It's still whispering in the background, Chris.
It was fine until I hit the recording and we started the recording.
I'll just try my other, my walk around handset, see if that has any change. Hello?
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 That's an improvement, Chris.
That is
much
better. Thank you.
Yeah, I've changed my handset.
This only proves one thing to me, that we can't talk to Europeans here from America with Japanese technology. If we only still made our own electronics, we'd be all right.
I think what it is, probably the cable from the telephone is like acting from an aerial, picking up signals from my laptop.
Well, it must be. Okay, so what are we going to talk about? We should talk about something. I mean, while we're here.
I'm just trying to...
Well, we were thinking initially of how can we attract the true Israelite people to the recognition of who they are.
Well,
I keep asking the Lord about this, because until they learn who they are, how are they going to call upon him for help?
I know it's very difficult for you people over there. I understand that. And it's even a lot harder than over here. And people don't want to listen over here where we still have absolute freedom of speech.
Yes.
You know, I mean, nobody gets arrested. I mean, I get hated for things that I say, but I don't get thrown in prison for it.
No.
But I don't think that, you know, we can ever compromise the truth. We're never going to attract people compromising the truth. I understand that you have to be a lot more discreet, but I think that people are much more receptive to willing to listen when you're not compromising.
Well, I feel that if we reach out to people who haven't been to church, we get a far better reception.
Absolutely.
Because they have nothing to unlearn.
Exactly. They don't have all that.
There's not a lot of baggage with them.
Right. People that go to church and accept everything that's being said, then they find it hard to believe that they're being lied to. And people that don't go to church, they don't go because they're being lied to.
Yes.
You know, it's a level of awareness, I believe.
And if you go to church and you know you've been lied to, don't tell anybody because you'll be thrown out.
And also, I think Catholics are more receptive than Protestants because they haven't been indoctrinated with the false interpretation of the Bible.
Right. I've always had a much greater success rate with people that were already disaffected with mainstream religion.
Yes.
There's no doubt. And some people have turned, you know, it's hard when people go so far away from mainstream religion and turn into atheists and skinheads and they hate everything Christian because they perceive it as Jewish. They're sometimes difficult to retrieve.
Yes.
But it's easier to reach the disaffected. There's no question there.
And that's what we find here. Most of the people that have sat in the pews and absorbed everything that's been spoken, truth and lies, they are very reluctant to think anything different. You know, you can present them with the scriptures or whatever, but no, they'd rather continue in that nice little rut. And I usually tell them, you know what a rut is? It's just a grave with the ends knocked out.
We need better propaganda. We need cartoons and slogans and posters, and somebody should be concentrating on that. I know this guy over here, Skip Baker, he tries, but I think he tries to put too much history in. I got to talk to him sometime. But we need better propaganda.
Yes.
And that's something that we should actually have. I mean, Skip's working on his own. We should actually have several people that can do graphics arts and come up with slogans working on that.
Yes.
Yeah, so he can certainly do with something like that. I know Alan, he's been pressing the BIWF to come up something, but of course he's banging his head against a brick wall there.
They're always coming up with things, but they're never the right ones.
Well, right, and they compromise, and their faith is compromised. Until they recognize that there's two sides of the Genesis 3:15 equation, that they're just that they're not going to have any success. They're going to continue to be marginalized.
Yes.
I think that they have a big problem right now with, you know, addressing this Wikipedia article that they they claim that they're Ephraim and that the Jews are Judah. And the DNA proves just that the two can't possibly be related. So they're mad at the DNA scientists and they're mad at Wikipedia.
Yes.
And we
had that over in Germany.
Yeah, I was hoping Matthew said he would phone in. He's done quite a bit of work on the genetics of the Europeans because he's a scientist and he's been in correspondence with genetic laboratories, and he's got a map showing all the haploid DNA types, and on that map it shows that the Jews are totally different to the Europeans.
Well, right, and I have on the front page of Christogenia, I have an article that somebody supplied me with that was actually recalled. And there's a notice right on the front page.
I've seen that.
Because they insulted the wrong people, I guess, from human immunology that shows that the Edomites, the Jewish people and the Palestinians are blood brothers, basically.
Yeah.
And that's who they are. And it proves, to me, the DNA evidence proves beyond doubt. That the two seed line, that the things that Clifton and I say about the Arabs and the Sephardic Jews is absolutely true. That they are the Edomites of the Old Testament, and that's why they're so closely related to the people of Canaan.
Well, and of course, we have the Lord's words itself. He says, "By their fruits you shall know them."
Well,
and why don't they show?
I don't know if you had a chance to listen to it or not, but with Sword Brethren, I did a program last week with USS Liberty survivor Ron Kukul.
Yes.
And he's a mainstream Christian, basically. And,
yes, we noticed he seemed very cagey when he first came on, but then he seemed to open up a bit when he saw, I think he felt there would be no opposition to him. If he said anything nasty about the Israelis, I think he was a bit apprehensive at first.
Well, right, and I kind of gave him a short history of the development of those people, and he more or less accepted it. He was pretty
he seemed quite interested. He said he'd have a look at your website.
Right, and I'm going to email him this week. I still haven't had the chance to do that because I have links to his books and some of his things on the front page of my site. But the if they were the children of Abraham, they would do the works of Abraham. That's the words of Christ, and that's absolutely true. And they've never, ever done the works of Abraham. So they can't possibly be the children of Abraham. It's pretty simple.
Yeah.
And
this was it was an excellent discussion. Because Chris keeps me in touch with all these things. He sends me the CD up with all the latest information on that. I enjoyed that about Liberty. Because I thought
I need
to know the truth about it.
Absolutely. And it's been, it has been terribly suppressed. And now 30 years later, 40 years later, actually, 42 years later, when it does come out, people don't care. There's an incredible apathy.
Yeah. Well, we sense that apathy in England. They're most of them there. As long as they've got a shilling in their pocket, away they'll go, they'll do. But we try to warn people, you know, that soon you won't have a shilling in your pocket. And what are you going to do then?
And not only are women being raped consistently by these Muslims, by these Muslim invaders, women are being raped and abused daily. And when they're all made to fly carpets, we call it, you know, to bend over on prayer rugs to Allah, then they'll wonder what went wrong.
Yes.
Well, when it's their apathy that allowed it.
Yes, that's quite true. And we see it more and more in this country. The enemy's using every device he can to overcome the Caucasian people. And however, we've got the Lord's promise. He's coming for a little remnant, a small remnant, he says.
Well, absolutely. But
there'll not be millions and millions of us.
Absolutely, but in the meantime, true Israel and true Judah are supposed to be witnesses, the two olive trees, and we have to desist the evil, and we have to reach out to our brethren.
Yes.
James says, "He who saves a soul from sin," right?
Yes. Well, that's our job, and we know what the job is, and we need the Lord's strength to go ahead and witness. I always ask the Lord, I say, you know, guide me to somebody who wants to hear. Because there are people who are willing to hear.
Absolutely. And I don't think, you know, that open proselytization really doesn't help us. Presenting the facts when we have the opportunity helps us.
Yes.
You know, just present the facts from an unbiased viewpoint.
Yeah.
You know, when the Jews, when the subject comes up with me and people that aren't attuned to identity, I tell them they're Edomites. They're the Edomites. Well, why are you calling them? It's a clear historical fact. And try to clarify the fact. And maybe some people will wake up, and the ones that don't. But I believe that people are sent to us, that we're really, you know, the days of the fishers, that day is over.
Now we're the hunters.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. Well, I've mentioned this to Chris before. At Christmas, there's a department store in Newcastle upon Tyne has a wonderful Christmas message in all the windows on one of the streets. And they had the simple Christmas story, the babe in the manger and all that. Now, in Newcastle as a city, they've had their Christmas decorations up, the lights. Not a sign of anything to do with the babe in the manger. But this shop had that Christmas story so simple a little child could have learned it, and, you know, singing carols and one thing and another. But one of the first windows, it had the Roman soldier out reading an edict. And of course he was an Israelite, wasn't he? Lovely light hair, pleasant countenance, and getting on with his job. And then you proceeded along and, you know, a beautiful animation of the story. And then you came to Herod sitting on his throne and the wise men coming and saying, "Where's the baby?" And I was absolutely thrilled when I saw Herod.
Did he look like her?
There was no doubt at all who he was.
That's incredible.
Edomite from head to foot.
That's incredible. I wish you'd gotten pictures of that.
And then
you'll have to go next year and get us some pictures of that.
Well, it might still be there. You might still be able to get one, Jean.
No, well, I was unhappy because I didn't have a film in my camera, because I would have loved to have had this. But the point, more to the point, Bill, is this. This window display, everybody takes their children. I used to take my children to it because it's a lovely story. But when it was all told, the people who do the animations and the little figures and, you know, the birds are singing and the little mouse is chewing on a bit of cheese and all the sort of things that would be happening in the town in those days in Bethlehem. And the animators, the people who fill the windows with these figures and all everything so beautiful and timely, they come from Germany. Now, isn't that wonderful? So I thought, well, there's the German animators. They know exactly that the Roman soldier was an Israelite. And all the figures, in you know, looking out of the windows and that, they're all these lovely ladies, just ordinary village women. But there was Herod. I thought, well, this is really wonderful. How did they... I thought, well, that's an encouragement.
Well,
that these
German
people know it as well.
It seems that somebody has some sense.
Yes,
I wish Chris would shut his Skype off. No, I'm kidding.
That's Alan trying to ring me, probably because he can't get in.
Oh, he can't get in. And I was thinking he was going to come here and listen to it on my second phone, but apparently, although the roads are so cluttered with snow, it's no wonder he decided not to come down.
Oh, a lot of snow in Britain this year.
Oh, dear.
Oh, yeah.
The back lanes, you cannot walk out on them.
Judith just thought that was funny.
Oh, I did.
We've had hardly any here in New York. I mean, where I am, I've been pretty fortunate anyway.
Well, we've got about 2 feet of snow in some places, and in some of the glens in the valleys, it's gone down to minus 20 at night. And while Siberia can handle this, we can't. Everything stops. You know, the railway stations don't function. There's no transport. And nothing happens, so it's quite incredible. And you know what? I think it's our Heavenly Father taking us to task over that Copenhagen Treaty. The feeling it's his sense of humour.
Well, right. We would deserve an ice age right now for buying into Al Gore's lies and the rest of these Jews.
Everybody yes. I've met has said, if this is global warming, they're realizing it's just, you know, I tell everybody else, oh, that's just put forward to make you fearful. And so they're all deciding around me at any rate that there's no such thing as global warming, not when it's cold as this.
I was actually very disappointed because I was out of circulation for so long and read all these global warming accounts and hoped that I would be able to go fishing year-round when I got out.
Well, you can still go fishing even if you're supposed to be a hunter.
Well, nah, it's you know, I knew it was all bunk from the beginning. But it's just incredible the way people swallow it down, believe every lie. And the revelation and the words of Yahweh tell us that it would be like this, right?
Yes.
So we should be amazed in our faith. Our strength and our faith should be even more, even enhanced even more because we see this.
Yes.
Because we see so many people believing these lies. It's incredible.
Yes, it's
hello, we've got
the prospects are glorious for us. And for any who will take note of the message that's coming forth.
Right, I do what I can. I mean, I you know, those somebody from Germany is in the forum, and I really tried to present on my Mein Kampf site, and I have a lot more information to present there yet. It's far from over. It's far from complete. But a version of history that overcomes all of the Jewish propaganda and all of the lies that have been pushed on people the last 50 years. It's incredible.
I've learned so much from the Mein Kampf website. It's just incredible. And the books, the facsimiles, I mean, they're so easy to read, and you just wonder why you never came across them before. But when you do, it's incredible.
Well, these books have been bought up. They've been, you know, the publishers that were brave enough to publish them in the 20s, 30s, and 40s have all been bought out through this global consolidation. So now that we have only five or six publishing conglomerates in the whole world, who would publish something like that?
Yes.
Nobody else will publish anything. Simon & Schuster's never going to publish anything like that. It's never going to happen.
No.
And also, in the early, well, say the early days, when I was a youngster in the 50s, and then it right up to the 60s, 70s, every town had several second-hand bookshops. You know, you go in and find lots of different things. Now that all the second-hand bookshops have virtually disappeared, they're only in a few towns now.
Well, right, because here in America, you'd go to Amazon.com has all the second-hand books, and AliPriest has all the second-hand books, and it's so easy to for people to put them online that they are that the ones that are in the small towns can't make a living anymore. They have to close up. They can't pay their rent.
But you know, if you have any ancient dictionaries or encyclopedias or whatever, they're the ones to hang on to, because all the modern ones have been taken over by these certain people. They've withdrawn the truth out in many cases and just put their lies in. And so anybody just buying an up-to-date concordance or whatever, most of the time they're just getting their lies.
Right.
So hackling to the old books.
I had mentioned that to Clifton when we did that little program, you know, where you were talking about the Crusades, kind of, for part of it. Anyway.
Yes.
And I had done some research on the Crusades, and that I have this Encyclopedia of World History here that's supposed to be the one-stop shop for history, you know, for an overview of anything in history. And there's nothing about the pogroms against Jews in the Crusades or in, you know, in 11th, 12th, and 13th century Europe.
Now, so when was the book published?
Well, it's been published within the last 10 or 15 years.
Oh, yeah, but probably if you got an older book, for example, I think the Encyclopedia Britannica was bought up by proxies of the Rockefellers in 1912. So any good information, if you get an Encyclopedia Britannica before 1912, you have good information in the other, but because later the later editions they obliterated lots of things. For example, in the 1911 edition of Encyclopedia Britannica, it said vaccinations were a dangerous procedure, but guess what? The 1912 it disappeared.
Right. Clifton actually has a couple of ancient Encyclopedia Britannicas. I pray he's kind enough to will to me. if I'm still around, Clifton's going to be here a long time, I hope. But no, he has like an 1898 Encyclopedia Britannica, and
that should be valuable.
He has one a little more recent than that. That maybe like 19 something, 12, 19, 14 around there. But books like that are valuable, and they are disappearing, and they. You know, the enemy wants to get rid of all the old books.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
It's a war on our culture. It's an ongoing, extended 100 years war against our culture. It's incredible.
True.
So that's why it's important, you know, try and get all these old books scanned, you know, and spread around.
Well, right, and that's why I put all those JPEGs up on my site. And thanks for pointing out that broken one. That was my... That was my finger. That, you know, that was a typo in the HTML file.
A peculiar thing, you know, with that Russia one, I don't know whether there's somebody mucking around with it, but you log on, you click on it, you get two pages, you know, page come up. I go to click on it to save it, and when I go to do another one, they've all disappeared. So I log in again, and then they come up again. Then I might get down to page two or three, do it again, and then they keep disappearing. Do you know any reason? Do you know any reason why that should be?
Well, you know, all you have to do is get the first file name,
yeah,
and the address, right?
Yeah. I did. That's what I've been. You know, I got the login for that file, and it's still, you know, I log in directly to it, and the same thing still happens.
Well, two pages are missing from that also that I just discovered.
I don't know. I can never get really. Today I managed to get down to page four, I think. But
do is send me a request, and I'll send you. You know, if you send me a request with your address, I'll send you a CD. I don't.
All right.
I had the same problem with it, Bill.
I'll send you a CD. Send me a request with it. You know, Judith, I have your address. But you know, if I get a request with it, don't go downloading all that stuff. I'll send you a CD. It only take me 2 minutes to burn a CD. If I know what you want, you know what? I put so much stuff up that if I don't get a request, I'm not going to be able to guess what you want, and it would be a lot easier. Because I encourage people, you know, I know you have problems in Europe, and I encourage people, David, taking that stuff off my site and saving it, you know? It's, it should
be. Well, the same thing happened, you know, I don't know if you. You got it, that report, that German report, German Red Cross report, saying there was only, I think, 200,000 people died in the concentration camps. Well, I sent it to Matthew in Germany, and by the time he got it, that had disappeared off the email. So I sent it again. And embedded it, and put the title "Holiday Camps," and then he got it.
Okay. If you want anything like that, it's expensive. Just ask me, and I'll send you a CD. I'll burn off the CD and send it to you.
Well, I could pick it up off the website. You know, download from the Ensign site. I did the those others you put on there. Get which ones they were now. Oh, yeah, that was that report on the immunization report.
Okay, just send me a list, you know, and I'll burn it all off on a CD and send it to you. You'll have it all.
Yeah. No, what I'm saying, so sending it, because the last lot I got all right off the, you know, the Ensign site where I go in with the downloader. I could get it off there, perhaps, if you transferred it, you know, put a copy over there, then that would save you posting a CD.
Oh, if I put it over on a new Ensign, okay, I could do that.
I just think it'd be less trouble than putting it on a CD and sending it.
Yeah, it's 6 to 1, half a dozen the other. I could do that. Just send me a list of what you want. And I'll put all those images over there. But it you know, it takes some time. It takes some time.
Oh, yes.
I have to make a note of it. If you send me an email with a list of what you want, that's a constant reminder that I have to do it. You know, that
all right. I try to avoid sending you too many. I don't want to add to your 500 a day.
Well, I don't get 500 a day. I got at least, I can't keep up with the emails, and I usually have 500 at any one time. And I get 100 emails a day, but most of, half of them are garbage. You know, and it's, I can't keep up with the ones I should answer. I just can't do it.
But you have to go through them to find out if they're garbage.
Well, I read them all right away. I read every email as soon as I get it. But I can't respond to them all as soon as I would do nothing but emails. It's crazy. Yeah, you know, I'm sorry. I would do nothing. So I try to respond to anything that's urgent or important or anything that'll be real, you know, a one-line response if that's all it requires. But everything else just has to wait. It's the way it is. I can't. I would never get anything else done. And I'm really not spending enough time reading and writing now. It's a struggle. I have Clifton Emmaheiser's new website is almost done. Well, you know, the website I did for Clifton is all PDF files, emmaheiser.christogenia.org. But now I'm actually putting the articles into a text database, which is just like the New Ensign site, but with a different template. It's the same type of program. And that's at emmaheiser.christogenos.org. But eventually it's going to become, as you know, it's going to be moved over to Christogenia.
I see we got Matthew from Germany, but he hasn't phoned in. I think he's guest 7, and guest 8 is Tejeta from Holland.
Oh, lovely.
So greetings to you, Tejeta, and Matthew.
Yes, it's great to have him here. And if you know, if you want to, if people can call in or if they could be at this course, I'll do this every other week or something. You know, we can make this pretty regular if you want, twice a month or something. If you just want to have a Q&A and open forum, I don't really have enough time to structure a whole other program. But this
better they don't. Perhaps they can't get in. I don't know. I thought they did say they were going to rig in, but perhaps they've had trouble. I don't know.
Well, I know the telephone thing is expensive.
Well, I found it difficult to actually get in, so the call earlier on.
Guest 7 saying how to get in to get.
But the instructions are on the bottom of the screen. He'd have to adjust that to make the international call.
Yeah.
You know, the dial-in number is at the bottom of the screen.
Yeah, so probably don't realize that, you know, they. Because when you dial in, it asks you for your ID, and they probably got mixed up.
Right.
It's a personal ID or program ID.
Right. You've got to dial in, and then it's going to ask you for a call ID, and you have to hit 67332 in the pound sign. And then it's going to ask you for a PIN number, but you could call in as a guest. You just hit 1 in the pound sign where it asks you for a PIN number. It'll give you instructions.
I just wonder, can more than one person use number 1?
I think it'll just automatically issue the next number.
All right. So hopefully they might ring in.
That would be lovely to hear them.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's what we're here for, but, you know, if there's questions and answers or anything that could be addressed or anything that could be done or we could discuss anything that could be done, you know, that's why we're here, right?
Well, that's the whole point of the meeting.
Well, right. I know that, you know, a lot of people in Europe, they read our websites and the forums and they think that that we're very America-centric, you know, and that's just because most of us are in America. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, back in the days when the BIWF was the leading factor in identity, I'm sure a lot of people thought it was Anglo-centric. And with some of their beliefs, it is certainly Anglo-centric. That's the way it is. But
and
they were all English then, weren't they?
There's a message from Betty saying, can you tell Chris I'm trying to get in?
Oh,
yes,
he sees you, Betty.
Yes.
Yeah.
But I often think that the Americans think that the IWF is the main thrust of this in the UK. And
that is the impression we get.
Yeah, well,
we get.
I don't think it is. It might have the most money, but it's not the most active, and I don't think it's the best supported. There are quite a lot of factions, but the smallest part probably is what you and I would call Christian identity. But that's because we're still trying to get the word out.
Well, you know, they should have websites or a presence. You know, I mean, they could get a website through an American host, can't they? Even if they had something that you may not want to put on a British website.
Oh yes, I'm sure they can do that.
You know, the only ones I'm aware of are. You know, Alan, I hear about Alan Campbell in Ireland, but I've never seen anything from him.
Yeah, well, he's independent.
He's rather independent, is it? But I've never seen a website other than the DIW website.
He's not.
He's got his own website.
Yes, Open Bible Ministries.
Mm. Yes, that's his.
And another quite good identity preacher we got is Bill McMurdo. I don't know if you've heard of him. He's up in Glasgow in Scotland.
Yeah, I've been copied on some of his stuff from Alan Fadler.
Oh, right.
Yeah, you know, some of Alan Fadler's correspondence, I've you know, seen that he's copied on it. And
yes.
First.
Looks as though Olin Fodler hasn't been able to log in.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, but we'll do this again. I don't know what his problem is. I mean, he was here and got kicked out. It's a pain in the butt, but I can't, you know, determine what his problem is from here.
No. And also, I think there's quite a few, you know, it's a new thing to them, especially on the continent, so they're probably not quite au fait with how to get in. And also, you know, I mean, that their language isn't English, so whether that's a problem, you know, reading the instructions, I don't know.
Yes, Les, evidently Alan Campbell is the preacher who only speaks about the Jews when he's here in America.
Yeah.
Probably. But he has a very difficult time over there in Northern Ireland.
Well, I have a friend in Northern Ireland who's a very dear friend, and I don't talk to him much, enough. But he wrote me in prison several times, and I just wrote him. I hope I hear from him. But he has explained to me how difficult it is over there and the hard time that he has over there. And he basically said that, you know, just getting caught handing out Magnus Clifton's literature can really get you in serious trouble.
Yes, yes. We haven't had to live through that.
That's a damn shame that, you know, these supposedly Western democracies where freedom of speech is valued, and there is none. In Canada, there isn't any. And you know, we have all those trials with Arthur Topham and those other gentlemen. I'm sorry, I don't have all their names on the tip of my tongue.
And Sundell, he was in Canada for a time, wasn't he?
People like David Irving. I mean, David Irving is a mainstream historian. He's not a revisionist, real. I don't consider him a revisionist. Not like a Germar Rudolph. Yeah, you know, and he goes to prison in Austria for writing a history book questioning gas chambers. That's ridiculous.
Well, I think Irving's big crime was exposing Churchill for what he was, you know. He did a very good, I think he's going to bring out another book. I think it's about four volumes on the history of Churchill, showing what a rogue he was.
Well, good for him. I hope that the publicity he got makes it sell a million copies, but
yeah.
Somehow I don't think that's going to happen.
No. It certainly wouldn't be in the mainstream bookshops because they're all controlled by our friends.
And I understand his website just got hacked.
Yes.
That they recognize.
And he was telling us in the meeting, he did a tour of America just before Christmas. and he couldn't understand, you know, every time he went to a venue, these balaclava people came to break up the meeting. And he found out his cell phone had been cloned. So every time he spoke on it, their phone would ring and they would hear exactly what he was saying. And he said, you'd only, somebody with great resources were about to clone, you know, a mobile phone.
Mm-hmm.
So he said that he got around that by taking the battery out. But they actually, one group did get caught, and he said they are prosecuting them. He said usually he doesn't give evidence, you know, otherwise it's just more adverse publicity for him. But he said he would in this this time because it's upset his business. You know, he's not getting any sales of his books.
He damn well should. They prosecuted him. You know, they would prosecute you in a minute. And that's the only way to address it. Yes, they should be prosecuted. There's no doubt. It's the enemy harasses you. You have to use the same system against him that he uses against us. And if the system turns out to be hypocritical, well, it's got to be destroyed anyway. It's a hypocritical system. But you can't give them an inch because they'll just walk all over you. David Irving, I've read a few of his short articles in the Barnes Reviews as they've come out. And that periodical has really taken a bad left turn since this Michael Collins Piper took it over. I'm discussing with the Barnes Review. But I haven't had the chance to read any of his books, and I probably won't because most of my reading is still ancient history, and that's where I'd rather occupy my time.
Bill, Matthew seems to have problems getting
in. I was just telling him to do.
I know, but I'm sorry. I have a hard enough time dialing Britain, you know. I don't know anything about international calls. I just don't.
It was that last number that he's referring to that I don't understand.
Well, I think I've just told him #1 because that's when you dial in as a guest. So he's probably given the you know, the program ID, and then he's, because then they tell you to give a number, you know, your personal ID number, and, you know, maybe he doesn't understand the English or, you know, about, or a guest.
Right.
So I just told him to do #1, you know.
Once he connects to TalkShoe and hears welcome to TalkShoe, he has to hit 67332 and the pound sign or the number sign. And then it's going to ask him for a PIN number or give him an instruction to press 1 and the pound sign again.
Yeah. He's probably just hearing, you know, because you have to bear in mind he's hearing it in English and it's not his first language, so he might have missed the bit about he latched onto the PIN number, you know. But I've just typed in #1.
Well, I'll be around for as long as you people want to be around today, so maybe he'll have time to get in.
And perhaps Betty will as well. I think Betty's been trying.
Yeah, I'm sorry to have a hard time, but I can't dial. Yeah, you know, I have a hard enough time dialing from here to there, never mind from there to here.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, I think once they get the idea of it, it's when they ask for the program PIN number, and then they ask for your PIN number. It's easy to think they're wanting you to put the big number in twice. But once they get the idea that you just have to put 1 and then the hash key, they'd probably hear what we heard. You're joining the program.
Right. Well, the hash key, we call it a pound sign, and it's a pound sign on the recording. That's the problem is America doesn't know how to speak English, eh?
Yeah, he's probably pressing the pounds, you know, the actual pound sign on his keyboard.
Well, we don't even have a pound sign on our keyboards.
You'll be a dollar sign. But we have a dollar sign on our keyboard, but not a euro sign.
Well, hopefully
we don't intend to have a euro sign.
I was just going to say, hopefully you won't need a euro sign.
No.
Well, now, after the 1st of December, of course, with the ratification of the Lisbon Treaty, we're supposed to be well and truly in there. I'm sure we'll be able to put a spanner in the works.
I hope so.
Well, we try hard enough.
I really do. I don't know. Who knows what will happen to Britain with the EU and the euro, and may as well just give up and move to America.
Out of the frying pan.
Yeah, right. Right into the fire. We need some white people immigration. We need some euro immigration in America.
We would like some colored
Yeah, I know. We're all being overrun, and it's a matter of scripture. Yeah, you know, the day is coming when I will sow the house of Israel and the house of Judah with the seed of man, which is Adam, and the seed of beasts, and that can only describe this day. That's exactly what's going on.
We are looking for the day when we read that these people will all flee to their own countries.
Yeah, well, I think rather than
that. That will be good.
Well, we're told it's going to take us 7 months to bury the bones when he returns. That's what we're told.
Oh, yes. And that's why I say we need to be here and active so we can each take a part. It's not going to be a pleasant job, but then we haven't to look at the job, we have to look at the outcome when the land is cleansed.
Right. And I believe that, you know, there's always a remnant to his people on the earth that know the truth. And
oh, yes.
Those are the people that'll know what's going on when it happens.
Yes. He's planted the seed in our hearts, and that's... You just take it from there. He says, you'll know the truth, and the truth will set you free. So we're looking for freedom.
You were saying, Tia?
Well, I was just thinking that prophecy about our rulers having given their kingdom to the beast. It's so clear that that's what is happening at the moment, and they're falling over themselves to do it. And it's quite comforting,
right,
in
Revelation,
a sense.
Revelation 17.
Yeah, it's quite comforting to know that our Heavenly Father knew this was going to happen.
Absolutely.
And, you know, we are living through that. But as I say, it's quite comforting as well to know that it's all under control.
Yes,
it is. And they'll only get away with what he wants them to get away with. And it's
that's
to chastise.
Right.
It's to chastise the children of Israel, and that's how we know we're the children of Israel.
Because we're the ones being chastised.
Right. These prophecies have never ever come close to being true of anybody else.
No.
And if this isn't the fulfillment of the prophecy, then why are we being overrun with aliens? No race. I mean, it's absolutely self-destructive. It's a perfect fulfillment of the prophecy. And we prove it because we're the Christian people, and we're the ones that are suffering this. So it's all proof of you know, the truth of our identity profession. It all works together to prove that our identity profession.
Yeah, these confirmations are here, aren't they, all around us?
All around us. We have the confirmation all around us every day. Every time the Jews hatch a new plot or the Rothschilds, or however you want to call them, or we see the confirmation.
Mm-hmm. Also, the Bible says, you bring all nations against Jerusalem. Well, the Judeo-Christian church think that's the Jerusalem in the Middle East, but actually it's all the Israelites in the north. It's speaking of Jerusalem in the sense that it's all of the white Caucasians in the north.
Well, right. The city is off of Yahweh's radar ever since the destruction of it by Titus.
Yeah.
That's when Jeremiah was fulfilled that the city would be broken and never made whole again. So all the references to Jerusalem can't mean that city in Palestine.
No.
Can't have anything to do with it. Because that city was broken to never be made whole again.
Yes. And as so many believers expect that the Lord Jesus is going to come to that city, well, why would he come to such a dreadful place? He's coming to his own people, not his enemies.
Right.
Sometimes it's so plain, we cannot...
Well, right, it's plain to us because we're blessed with the ability to see it.
Yes.
And a lot of our brethren, simply their eyes haven't been opened. And they're not going to be open until Yahweh opens them.
Yes.
And when Yahweh opens their eyes, it'll be his people in the earth that will be the vehicle for instructing the rest of us.
Yes. And we just praise Yahweh for the fact he opened our eyes. He's given us eyes to see these things.
Right.
And lips that they might tell. That's a little old hymn from childhood.
Well, you know, they have to tell. We have to tell because you don't want to be the servant that hid your
Well, no, you can't afford to hide your talent.
Right.
No. And the truth's burning in our hearts. We can't contain it. We've got to tell it out. And it's lovely when you can tell it out to somebody who wants to hear.
And often you're hated for telling it, but that's the way it's supposed to be, too. I mean,
yes, well,
blessed are you when men hate you and cast your name out as evil.
Yes. Providing that we are right with the Lord, we don't care what the world says or thinks. At least I don't.
Precisely. And that's the way it should
be. Keeping in with the Lord. If we are obedient to his ways, we can't go wrong, really. Because the world's not going to take on with us. And we're not concerned what they think, really. Of course, I mean, I keep telling people, read John chapter 17. The Lord says, I'm not praying for the world. I'm praying for these, the ones you have given me. And I just thank him, I'm one of them that he has been given. But universalism's really taken over the churches. They want everybody to be included, and that's not what the Bible's about.
Absolutely not. It's universalism here is terrible.
Yes.
It's absolutely horrible.
And of course, you're victimized if you don't go along with it. Well, we don't mind that either.
Actually hated because I don't go along with by some people in my own family, but that's the way it is.
Oh, yes,
I don't care.
Yes, well, there again, that's fulfilling the Lord's word. He said, your own people will despise you.
Well, absolutely. And like
he's come to set father against son and sons against
confirmation. That's another confirmation. And that's a total confirmation that the word is true. Because the love everybody Dharma religion of the Judeo Christians, nobody hates you for that. They might think you're an idiot, but they don't hate you for it.
No. But you just tell them two words of truth and they don't want it and they don't want you either.
Especially if you say something about the chosen people, inverted commas.
Well, right, and it's our confirmation that we were told that it would be that way, and that's we have all sorts of confirmation.
And then, of course, we come to a Lord that definitely being chosen, but not for what you think.
Exactly.
They are chosen indeed.
Yes, they are chosen vessels of destruction. Just like Paul told us. Romans chapter 9. I hear a bell. Is that tea time in Britain? No, I'm kidding.
No, it wasn't. Was that somebody trying to ring in? Oh, I think looks like June's just logged off. I have to log off soon and log on again because we get an hour's pre-call, you know. And then if I log off and log on again, I get another 3 hours call. But if I go over the hour, then you have to pay for it.
Oh, okay. That's a strange system.
Yeah, but
well,
at least
Chris, you better log off now.
Pardon?
You better log off now then.
Yes.
Yeah, I'll log off and log on again.
Then I have tea at Tethy all to myself. So how you doing? Have you been over to that site lately? The new Ensign site, have you seen it lately?
Yes, I have. I think it looks pretty good. I'm most impressed with all your work.
Well, there are new documents. You know, the documents are being posted slowly but surely.
Yes, I keep looking through them.
They'll make
but
it sooner or later.
Yeah, I mean, reading, keeping up to date with all the reading, I'm not complaining, but it's just incredible how much there is to do. I've got the Culture of Critique sitting on my desk waiting to be opened.
I have it, too. I ordered a copy also, and it's sitting upstairs on the bookshelf. And it's collecting dust immediately because other things are more important.
And I've been so busy downloading the facsimiles as well because they are just so brilliant. And that's why I wanted to get hold of Russia number one because it had disappeared from the face of the planet.
Yes, virtually. It will.
I'm reading at the moment. I'm reading. Just a moment.
Okay, be patient.
Sorry about that. I'm reading at the moment The Bloody Red Streak, which is from your website.
I just fixed a page in that was missing.
Yeah, and that's by Trefor David. He's a Welsh guy, as you can guess by the name. And it's absolutely brilliant. You know, every paragraph is so succinct. There's no waffle in it. And it's the sort of thing you can read in about one sitting. But it is just so full of information, and it's just incredible. I just wish I could put it in everybody's hand.
Well, all I have to do is go to mk.christogenia.org and download it. What can I say?
That's right. Yeah, so I've printed most of them off. There's just the odd one that I've had problems with. But it's a superb repository. And I've certainly enjoyed the Sunday evening. What do you call that? Sunday evening, your show with Sword Brethren.
I call it the Christogenia Mein Kampf Project, but it's his program. You know, it's Sword Brethren's program. I don't know if he has a name for it.
Oh, right. Well, that's the one. I always think it's really good.
Good. I'm glad you like it. And I hope... I really wish other people from, I don't know how many people from Europe listen to that. I'd really, if anybody from Germany wants to, you know, I'll send me their address, I'll send them a CD with those programs on it.
Right, okay.
You know, if they want to post them over there, they're welcome to do it.
Right, okay. By the way, can you unmute Sussex Man?
Whoops. Yes, I will. I wasn't watching. I was bad. I wasn't watching the screen.
Oh, back again.
And I'll have to do the same thing because we're on the same telephone
system.
This screen is popular over there, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's absolutely free. It doesn't
That's
cost
amazing.
A penny.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
So it doesn't have to go over the hour. So.
I'm going to disappear.
And we've all got to go and come back. Well, I am back. I've been out and back in.
I pay through the nose when I call Britain. because I don't have the, you know, I don't pay for this expensive plan every month, because how many times do I call overseas? But I call Britain and I pay $1.05 a minute.
Oh, that is a lot of money.
Yes, $1.05 a minute.
Even on the, you know, if you're not on the free call, it's about 2p a minute, which would be about probably 3 cents a minute in your money.
Well, that Skype cost me about 2 cents or a penny something a minute, or Skype is cheap. I try to use Skype when I can. But yeah, the phone is expensive. And it's just a rip-off. That they want to get lock you into that big fee, that monthly, you know, service plan, you know, for unlimited calling, but it's $30, $40, $50, whatever they call it, charge you a month. I won't do that either. It's prohibitive. It's too expensive.
Well, I was I
have the UK unlimited call, so I can call landlines during the day, and that's of £2.50 a month, or I think it's if you have it for a year, it's about £12, so that'd be about $15 in your money, $18 in your money for a year's unlimited calls in your own country.
Wow, okay.
That's on Skype. So perhaps they think you can afford more in the States.
Yeah, I guess they can, and right now we're probably a lot poorer.
Yeah.
But that's all right. Obama thinks we have plenty of money, too, because he's trying to give another ton of money away to serve for a while. But with this Debt Forgiveness Act, so. I should say that the president, also known as Obama.
Yes.
Because that's not his name. But we have,
and that shouldn't be his position either, but...
Well, no, it shouldn't, but that's, you know, giving the kingdom to the beast, that's pretty literally fulfilled.
Yes, yeah, that is quite true.
Miss Alan Patterson keeps trying to Skype me. I can't be on two things at once.
No. No, that might present a problem.
Yeah.
Sorry, Alan. He'll catch the archive, maybe.
He's probably been trying to get in on his Skype, but it's probably a bit more difficult. I don't know.
Right. I don't...
He should have come to my home and listened on the second telephone, and then...
Yeah, I mentioned to Alan, you know, I said that June's got, you know, two phones hooked up together. You could go over there, you know, and listen in on the other phone and talk.
It's just the weather, the travelling, I think, will have put him off.
Yeah, maybe. Mind you, he's got a Land Rover, so...
Oh, he could have travelled all right, but it's getting parked when he gets here. I mean, even on my yellow lines, there's a stream of cars parked all day.
A Land Rover is a real yuppie mobile over here. I mean, you got to have some money to have a Land Rover here.
Well, I think I always say the fact he's got a one means he hasn't got any money. It's all been spent on the car.
Okay, that's a possibility.
However.
Well, I just have to tease him a little about that.
I see you got two more wanting to get in.
Oh, okay.
Tia Taffy and somebody Boxer.
Yeah, I should pay more attention to the forum. I'm sorry. I'm always trying to multitask.
Well, Tia Taffy's just gone out and wanting to come back again.
She's here.
I'm here now.
Yeah, it's lovely.
Bill. Could I ask you about the Martin Lindstedt? We've listened to him twice. And do you now have a more complete picture
Hello?
Of the history?
I'm on
Sorry,
my
can
call.
You hear me?
Well, yeah, I hear you. And I'm trying to let you finish your question.
Oh, right. Yeah. Do you have a more complete history now of Christian identity? Because Martin sounded as though he seemed to know everybody, but he was quite disjointed. His butterfly thoughts were a bit difficult to follow.
Right, and that's the way Martin is. He's very difficult to follow because he goes so quickly and he jumps over to, all over the place. And I really like Martin. He's a good guy.
Yeah, getting on the left.
He has a good heart, and I consider him like the Christian identity pastor to the Jerry Springer set.
Right.
You know, somebody has to be, and it seems to me that he, and I don't say that disrespectfully by any means, but it seems to me that he, most of the people that he deals with are out in the gutters, and I say that metaphorically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the people that troll the forums and the people that are wannabes and the people that are dissemblers and the people that and they're the people that he deals with all the time. And somebody has to do it. Somebody has to expose them. You know, because good identity people get caught up in their garbage all the time.
Yes, yes. No, I can understand that. I just found him difficult to follow, and there were one or two things I'd like to have known more about, but he hopped from one subject to the other.
Okay.
Hello?
I don't think...
He's basically talking about identity in the trenches and on the American internet. You know what I mean?
Hello?
Yeah. Yes, it was quite different from anything I've ever experienced, but it was interesting to hear him.
There, now Chris could Skype away. It is interesting to hear him, and I'm glad I had him on, and he was more than happy to be here, I gather, and Martin's a real good guy, and you just wind him up, and he'll just keep going and going and going. And in fact, he's actually self-winding.
I'm not surprised.
He's been involved in this for since at least the early 90s, probably longer than that. He's a couple years older than me, maybe the 80s or maybe even longer. You know,
to be going back a long way.
Yeah, I don't even think I ever got to talk to him about when he got involved in it. You know, it's just like he's always been involved in it.
He's
you see all these names I heard over and over again through the years, but I don't know the people like August Christ and people like that. And there have been a whole lot of charlatans involved in identity.
I was amazed.
That's why it's so important to have a good, solid foundation of knowledge. It's very important to have that so that you're not led away by the charlatans and you're not deceived by the charlatans. Like I've been going back and forth with Russell Walker and these Ephraim Scepter people. And they're just clowns. That's all they are clowns. And it's but they're out to deceive people and lead them astray.
I'm just curious, can any of y'all hear me?
Hello, Boxar.
Oh, hey, William. Good. Okay. Just wondering, because I never have called in before, so... I'm just making sure I got all the technical stuff sorted out. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Good to hear you.
What do you want? Skype sure. On Skype or on a telephone?
Skype. I'm using Skype.
And are you getting feedback?
The site keeps crashing as usual. I'm just having the same problems that everybody does. You know, the site crashes after a period of time. You know, when you go to the if you use a browser, if you're not using the client, right? So,
Matthew, I'd love to see you get into the forum. I don't know why you can't. I wish I could help you with your problem. Oh, Matthew, and he's in Germany, and he's having a hard time dialing in. He hasn't been able to get in. That's okay. We'll do this. I don't know if you people are willing to. I'm willing to do it every other week or twice a month, maybe. You know, maybe a first Thursday and a third Thursday or something like that.
Well, that sounds a great idea because I think we'd get used to this idea of communication.
Yeah.
Because for a lot of the people that we know, it's a bit foreign to them. But it's a great vehicle.
Yes, I agree with that, Judith. We need to be meeting up with one another, even if it is just over the telephone. Because very often locally we haven't any fellowship. But it's lovely to hear the brethren and sisters from here, there and everywhere. And I do wish that Matthew could get in, because he loves so much to contribute.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard that, but his telephone doesn't have the hash sign on it.
Wow.
And he's got other signs, and he's tried all of them, and none of them work.
Oh.
Well, it's the lowermost button on the right on American phones.
It is on the English one, the one I'm using.
Yes, but evidently on the continental ones, they haven't got it.
Oh, wow. That is terrible. How about the VoIP, Voice over Internet Protocol?
I don't know. Whether he could get in on his Skype, because there's a, on the dial-up modem on the Skype, you've got a hash, a pound sign on there.
Yeah, right. On the Skype, that should work. He could call in like he's calling a phone on Skype.
If you're listening, Matthew, if you dial in on the, try dialing in on the Skype and use the pound cash sign on the Skype, unless they've modified it in Germany to represent a German phone, you never know, do you?
I don't know. I can't answer that.
I'm just curious. Do the people over in Europe, are they dialing the American number to connect?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, we dial 001 to get into the American system, and then the number, and we have a hash sign.
The problem
like you do, but evidently they don't on continental Europe. It's probably something just special to the UK.
Well, you'll have to send them an English telephone. What can
Right. Well, now you can, of course, I'm assuming that you use Skype to dial in with an American number, right? Because you can do that, right?
Yeah, no, I'm on the landline. I'm dialing in on my telephone.
Right, in order to avoid, this dollar per minute that William was talking about there, right?
Yeah, well, it's not a problem in the UK, but it is on the continent, so that's why they've been having a problem.
Okay. So is the number? I'm just curious for those in Europe. Is dialing the TalkShoe number is that cost a per minute charge of money?
Well, it varies according to what package telephone package you've got. On my telephone package, I can phone the USA for an hour free of charge. So. After an hour, if I put down the phone and dial again, well, it's still free. But if I go over an hour, then they start charging.
Right. Yeah. I myself have Vonage here in. I live in Austin, Texas, and I pretty much can just call all over the world for pretty much a flat rate. You know, so it's not a big deal for me.
Yeah. Well, on this our telephone package, we can phone most countries free of charge for the hour. But also you can get a package off Skype, but Bill says it's very expensive in the States compared to what it is here.
To do what?
Well, you can get a yearly subscription on Skype to unlimited calls. Worldwide.
Right.
But I think from what Bill was saying, it's very expensive in the States.
It costs me...
Olin Fodler's on the line.
Yeah, I actually see him. I'm trying to unmute him. I click on him once. It don't like it. There we go.
Olin Fodler's there.
Olin Fodler, how are you doing? It's about time.
Hello.
Hello.
I've had great difficulty on my main computer, but I've got in on my wife's laptop, and I've just phoned on the ordinary line, so I better not stay on too long. I am on Skype, but I'm not sure what prefixes to use. I find it quite frustrating. But I've got the text up on my screen at last, you know.
Great. Yeah, I don't, you know, this talks to this. So there's a problem with their software and the Adobe Flash Player. And it's got to be the way the TalkShoe application has been programmed. It has to be. But
it's
free. So, I mean, you can't really cry too much about it.
Right. Oh, no. Especially if it's free, certainly can't. And you don't have adverts coming in every 5 minutes, you know.
Right. Well, there are advertisements on the screens now over here, and people should...
Oh, there are here, yes. But what I mean, unlike Republican radio, you're just getting into the swing of things, and it says, oh, we've got a break now for a bit, and you have to wait for a load of adverts, and then you carry on for another few minutes.
Yeah, that's so annoying, isn't it?
I don't know if I could do the Republic radio thing. It would just drive me crazy because you have 2-3 minutes to make your point. And
then you lose your train of thought.
Good point can't be made in 3 minutes, you know?
Yeah. They really do kill you with adverts.
I don't think I'm a soundbite kind of guy.
Yeah. Well, I think we have to work out something for our continental friends so they can get joined in.
Yes.
Well, you know, I'll do this... Yeah, you know, you guys fix the technical difficulties. I'll do this twice a month. I mean, this isn't a problem.
I think that would be wonderful if we can meet up together even twice a month. We need to be in contact and touch with one another.
Yes, I'm getting an error message. I was getting a message called runtime error. RUNTIME. The application has required the runtime to terminate in an unusual way. Bill, would you know what's going on?
Well, from a programming viewpoint, that means that the program that you're executing is making an illegal function call. And that's, you know, it's a programming problem. It's nothing that you could fix. It's only something that the programmer of the application can fix. And I know I used to be a programmer a long, long time ago.
So there's nothing I can do with it?
Nothing you could do.
But I've got in okay on my wife's laptop.
Well, right, but a slight change in the operating system or in one of the drivers or you know, the video or audio drivers, there's a million variables.
This laptop is Vista, you know, Microsoft Vista.
Well, there's one huge variable. It's a whole different operating system.
Whereas I'm on...
But there is on the market now a repair kit that goes, supposed to repair all your drivers, you know, problems with Vista.
Well, if there's a program, if there's a conflict with a particular driver, that you know, there's no guarantee that would fix it either.
Yes, I noticed Les number 7 suggests he wiped out his computer and reinstalled Windows. That's a bit drastic, but I may have to do that. But I'll just use the laptop. What have I missed of the program so far?
We've discussed a few things, but nothing of drastic importance. I mean, this is really a get your feet wet sort of adventure here.
Get to know each other sort of
thing. And if we do this twice a month and you ever want to discuss something in particular, you know, just let me know or I can probably talk about a lot of things extemporaneously, you know, but some things I would like to have a minute to prepare for. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, so it might be an idea to have a particular subject to talk about. As you say, you need time to think about it and get some notes and whatever.
Right, but it depends on the subject, too. You know, I mean, most New Testament subjects and a lot of historical subjects I could just talk about extemporaneously. The subjects I have a harder time talking about intelligently are really the ones outside of my field of study, like the Crusades and a lot of World War II stuff, because I've done a lot of leisure reading, but I'm not a Civil War or World War II historian, you know. But if you want to talk about Pericles and the destruction of Athens by the Persians, I'm up your alley.
Oh, right.
Yeah, some things I could talk about better than others, that's all.
If I could just mention it, I found a little book in my library called A Guidebook to the Bible, by an Alice Parmalee, with a foreword from William Neal, and it's English University Press, London. And the book's called Teach Yourself the Bible, or Guidebook to the Bible. And I just happened to notice in the foreword, if you could just read out a short paragraph here. And the New Testament we are shown is a record of men who claimed that all that had now begun to happen, the battle over evil, disease, and death, had in fact been won. Mankind, freed from the restraints of nationalism and bigotry, was now offered a new and exhilarating fellowship transcending all the barriers of race, class, and tongue.
That is just evil.
Wow. Yes, and it goes on, you know, in short, we see the Bible not as a haphazard collection of literary oddments, nor yet as a storehouse of accurate scientific information, much less as a repository of legend and superstition, but as a story of the creation of a people of God, in capitals, destined to become a worldwide community. Did you know that? Bound in loyalty and service to Jesus Christ as Lord. It's just tucked away, published in 1951, just after the war. And I suppose most of the people here in Britain were brainwashed into thinking that it was all about nasty Nazis wanting to take over the world, you know. So that's probably why they stuck in nationalism, you know, because we've been taught for 60 years that nationalism is bigotry and evil and wicked and nasty and anti-Christian.
Well, God is the author of nationalism. I mean, Paul says in Acts chapter 17 that he drew the boundaries and determined the times of the nations. He's the author of nationalism, so how could nationalism be bad?
Yes,
I think those people are double-tongued hypocrites. That's what I think.
Well, this Mr. William Neal, M.A., B.D., Ph.D., no less.
Yeah, well, he could have all the dots and the letters after his name he wants. I mean.
And he's a lecturer in Biblical Study, University of Aberdeen, Scotland. So I mean, he's probably a Presbyterian.
Yeah, and it's a shame, but. Yeah, people are definitely deceived. It's
nationalism. Nationalism is evil to the globalists.
Absolutely. Who are the anti-nationalists? And you'll know that anti-nationalism is evil. Well, once you find out who the anti-nationalism, they're the same people that are the antichrists.
Yes.
And that, you know, that American evangelicalism and the Schofield Bible and Bullinger, and that's the best Christianity Jewish money can buy.
Yeah.
That's what it boils down to.
Well yes, we've read these things and never really noticed them before. It's only since we've got into Christian identity that we realize that there's been this very clever, subtle brainwashing going on, and it's taken over the church, the organized, established church, and it's right across Roman Catholic and Protestant. There's very little difference now. I was brought up to believe that, you know, Roman Catholicism was primitive and wicked and superstitious and useless, and we Protestants were, you know, had all the right answers. You know, we had a mainline to God. You know, a fast track. You know, but the more I'm learning, the more I realize that one's as bad as the other.
Well, right. The world is not black and white. And, yeah. And I would like to say to Roman Catholicism that they did a lot of things bad. But, you know, until the 1500s, they held the line on usury, until the De Medicis. I've shown that in programs. And that was a good thing that they did. And they held the line against Judaism for 1,000 years, and that was a good thing that they did.
Yes.
And the Protestants came along, and they fixed a lot of the bad things that the Catholics did. But then that they accepted Calvin and Cotton Mather in Massachusetts, they accepted usury. What's up with that? That's not fixed. You know, they repeated the same mistakes the De Medicis did. Well, the De Medicis did it, and it wasn't a mistake. Yeah, you know, they did it to corrupt the church on purpose because they were a family of bankers. Now, Calvin, you know, a lot of people suspected he was of Jewish blood, and I really can't have an opinion on that because I don't know, but he sure as hell acted it, you know, accepting usury and redefining the definition of usury from the biblical definition, and that's hurt. But for 1,000 years, the Catholic Church did, even though they were wrong in a lot of other areas, they did hold the line against the Jews until the time of the De Medicis.
Yes, and the Protestants.
And the Protestants fixed a lot of bad things that the Catholics did. There's no doubt they straightened out a lot of things, but they embraced the Jews. So,
yes. And they also embraced the church as the sort of new Israel.
Yes, they did. They embraced the replacement theology, but they wanted a different replacement.
A different church to the Roman church. But
exactly.
Nevertheless.
Because that embracing of the Jews started with William of Orange when he came over from Holland.
Well, right, but actually it started with Charlemagne before him.
Yeah. No, I'm thinking particularly in Northern Ireland, because most of the Northern Ireland people, Alan will probably confirm this, they think William of Orange is a great hero because he came down on the side of the Protestants against the Catholics, but what they don't know is that the Catholics, I mean the Jews, had a score to settle with the Catholics when they burnt alive De Morlaix, you know, the Knights Templars, because they had agreed that if they, you know, didn't, if they gave themselves up, admitted that they were Knights Templars, nothing would happen to them, but in fact, they did. They were all imprisoned in France because the King of France at the time got fed up with the extortions they were doing. But in the meantime, they whisked away their gold, I believe, to Scotland. But since then, from that time on, the Jews wanted to get equal with the Catholics. So they did that through William of Orange, you know, and coming down on the side of the Protestants.
It's very interesting that there's very, very few Ulster Protestants would know anything about that, that's something I would need to research a bit.
Of course, you've got the six-pointed star, you know, around the red hand, you know, the Israelite symbol. They plonked a Jewish sign on your flag.
Yes.
And also six counties, you know, anything they do, it's always in sixes. six right. counties.
Interesting, yeah.
Hmm. Well, you know, it's the truth. Yeah, it's a damn shame that Irishmen are killing each other over the Protestant Catholic. Yeah.
Well, they unfortunately don't see the third hand, you know, whipping up anger on both sides.
Right, and that's exactly what's happening.
Mm.
That's how it's been from the beginning, probably.
Yes.
And I don't know if you've heard, Bill, about, you know, in Ireland they have the Orange Lodges, which are a Protestant association, and they maintain loyalty to the crown, but unfortunately they mix with Freemasons. They regard them as good compatriots, so you know they're infiltrated through and through, and that's again has been a cause of lots of the problems, because they know of their plans in advance.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the Freemasons are, it's basically another arm of Judaism.
Yeah.
Freemasonry, there should be little doubt. There shouldn't have been any doubt about that since at least the French Revolution, probably before that. But
so I don't know if you read that. I forget which article it was by Wesley Swift. He mentioned about the Hebrews regarding the Edomites, you know, as the people with funny handshakes. I don't know if you came across that.
No, I don't know. I've read a lot of Wesley Swift material back in the day, but I don't think I read that one.
Yeah.
And no, I haven't had the chance to read the material I posted at the New Ensign. I put it up there. But
well, I haven't had time to read them all, although I did, and it's about over 400 Swift.
You've had them a lot longer than I have.
Yeah.
Yes, I see Les, number 7, on the chat. He's asking about, is Ireland really Protestant versus Catholic? Well, I spent 30 years in Northern Ireland, right through the bad part of the recent troubles with mainly IRA and the Protestant paramilitaries shooting and bombing each other. And massive destruction of property, you know, millions upon millions of pounds blown up and set fire to, and but worse than that, you know, hundreds of policemen and soldiers and ordinary civilians and on both sides of the line.
He might be intoning, you know, whether or not it's actually a tribal war too.
Well, yes, it is to a large extent, but part of the problem is that there's a legacy that people, sincere, well-meaning people, can't see the big picture. You know, that they get bogged down in this Protestant Catholic. I mean, it's more about who governs Northern Ireland, whether it's the Dublin Republics or Britain. I mean, there is a great loyalty to Britain, or there was until maybe the last 20 years. But as the Protestant community realized that the Queen, Queen Elizabeth, the monarchy, doesn't seem to be doing much to conserve our heritage and our country, there's a lot of disillusionment and...
Well, her husband was a Canaanite, and her son's a Canaanite, and he sure as hell, if he ever sits on the throne, that's about it for England.
Well, that might explain, that might help explain things, but people are very disillusioned with the current British government, therefore the old bond to Britain and England and the crown, the lion and unicorn and all that heritage has weakened greatly. And then with the European Union gradually taking over in the last 30 years, people realize that, there's not much difference between the British government in London and the Irish government in Dublin, that they're both ruled by Brussels and by the United Nations and the WHO and all these supranational organizations.
But all those organizations are just fronts for the bankers in the city.
Well, very, very, very few people have any idea of what's going on. I mean, in Irish churches, you know, particularly in the north, there's never been any tradition of questioning the minister or the pastor or the rector or the vicar. You know, they stand up and deliver their 10-15 minute sermons, but no one ever asks or questions or queries. Occasionally, some of the enthusiastics would go after the service and maybe ask a question in the vestry, but during the service, it would be bad manners to actually interrupt the religious service. So these clergy are never put on the spot, you know. And I think any forum in Christian Identity or British Israel should automatically welcome questions, you know. No one's above being questioned.
I expect to be questioned. I beg to be questioned. My work always has.
Well, that's most commendable, but in British Israel circles, where we've sort of come from, and we're on a bit of a limb, we're sort of semi-detached. There's never been, there doesn't seem to have ever been this opportunity to question the lecturer, you know, and only by questioning, putting people on the spot, you know, challenging preconceived ideas, do people learn, you know, and again, I think that's maybe a Roman Catholic tradition where it would be unheard of to interrupt the priest.
Well, right, and that's Nicolaitanism, you know, that's conquering the people.
But it's carried over into Protestant, to a lot of Protestant churches.
Yes, it has. You're absolutely correct.
And although the nonconformist churches, the smaller informal churches, I suppose it would be easier to question, But there again, those clergymen, those pastors and ministers often are quite arrogant in their beliefs, you know, that they hold their beliefs deeply and they will not change, you know, they're very stubborn to rethink, especially when they're getting on, you know, in their 40s and 50s and 60s. That's a big problem, and you know the Protestant side are almost as bad as the Roman Catholic side, because people can't progress, people can't develop unless they put themselves up to challenge. You know, that they have to be able to justify the doctrine they're teaching. Us little rump are considered the sort of awkward squad, you know, the bad manners, bad taste to interrupt or to question, you know.
Well, so that's why I have these open forums.
Yeah.
So that people can question. You know, everybody has an opinion, but what is your opinion based on? That's what's important.
Yes.
Why do you have that opinion?
Well, I thought it was very good. The German Identity conference I attended in the Black Forest, because all the lectures which were given, you could interject during the lecture, although not many did. But if there was an important point you wanted to query. And then afterwards, there was always time to query what they had said, and they answered your questions. But on the, you know, the BIWF forums, and Alan will probably confirm this, after the lecture, you don't get any opportunity to ask any questions within the forum, only if you nobble the speaker after the meeting is finished.
It's It's prevalent even in American churches here. They don't question their ministers, and how dare you question their ministers? I have Baptist cousins who accuse me of denying the Bible while I was quoting it to them. They couldn't believe that I was going against their religion that they think they learned in the churches, and I'm quoting the Bible, and they're calling me Bible deniers. As I quote the Bible, it's impossible. It's incredible, and they don't see the hypocrisy of that position.
Yes, number seven was slapped on his face when he was only 12 for questioning some of the, I presume, Roman Catholic catechism.
And that's incredible, because Joshua Christ was what when he was 12 in the temple questioning the Pharisees.
Yes, well, our Presbyterian catechism, the shorter catechism, the very first question was, who was the first man, you know? Adam was the first man, you know? And it goes on, I was brought up to believe that those were irrefutable truths, you know, that we were so much cleverer than the poor Roman Catholics and their superstitions, you know. But now I've begun to realize that a lot of that shorter Presbyterian catechism is not actually true, you know. Still, it gave us a good grounding, I suppose, because most kids, including my own, don't get any of that at all. You know, having a bit of formal religious upbringing in terms of Sunday school and church does help in many ways. So we mustn't knock it too much, I suppose.
Well, you know, I had catechism, and I told this story on talk show a few weeks ago. I had catechism in a Catholic school in Jersey City called St. Aidan's. And this Catholic school was a little peculiar, because most of the Catholic schools, the priests ran them, and they were the administrators. And they had nuns in as guests and teachers, you know. And this Catholic school, the nuns ran it, and the priests were guests and teachers. And the nuns administrated the school and made the curriculum. And I wish I knew what order of nuns it was, but I don't. And they were all, like, over 90. I mean, when you're five, that's how they look, you know? They were all old women. And they had taught us by second grade that Yahweh was the name of the God of the Bible. And they also never talked about those Old Testament people being Jews. I never heard the word Jews. We talked about the Exodus in Catechism and Judges and Samuel, and they were always Hebrews. They were never Jews. And you know, I switched schools after fifth grade, and I went to a school that had priests administrating it, but all of the principal and all of the teachers, they had no nuns. They were all like lay teachers hired from the street. And it was really new agey, and the religion classes had a whole different tone, and the catechism went out the window, and it was all Dharma, love everybody, garbage, new age garbage from that was typical of the 60s and 70s. I started fifth grade in 1970, I think, or maybe, yeah, 1970, right. And it was like junk, and it just totally disaffected me from religion. And I stayed that way until I found identity.
I'm just trying to think back when I was at Sunday school, whether they used the Jew word or Israel or Hebrew.
Yeah, it was all Hebrews. I never heard the word Jews until I heard my father cursing about them all the time, you know.
I just can't remember what they did. You see, most people run them all together, you know. I mean, I read some learned books, and it starts off talking about Jews, and then it talks about Israel, and then it talks about Hebrews, and there's just no logic to it, you know. So the three words are almost synonymous, but it's sloppy thinking, and obviously we try to differentiate between them. And again, in certainly Protestant circles, there used to be, you know, they used to teach a bit of biblical history, but it was very much focused in Palestine. I mean, you they would occasionally mention Egypt or Assyria, but we were all brought up to believe that all the action was in that tiny little statelet, you know, of Palestine, and that's the only part of the world really that God was interested in, and any of the prophecies, you know, that they would all focus there, and I suppose it was quite a small-minded worldview, you know. It was a narrow, small view, but I've heard people saying, you know, I only read the Bible, you know, if it's not in the Bible, you know, I don't want to know. I deliberately never read any other books but the Bible, you know. The Bible's all I need, but now I know that's just not sufficient, you know, especially when from chapter 40 of Isaiah onwards, it's really talking about the north.
Talking about the people in the isles outside the Palestine.
The isles of the sea and the coastline. I mean, the Hebrew word for island, I'm not sure, but I think it also means coastline.
It's you know, pronounced like I, not E-Y-E. That's why you get island, because it comes from the Hebrew.
Yes, but I think it can also mean coastline. So the British Israel people, they tend to think it's just the British Isles.
Well, right, it does just mean the coastline. It can,
but it can mean, it could mean Denmark and Norway and Sweden and France, the seaboard. The
Well, right, and the Phoenician people, if you follow them, I mean, I've talked about it often, they settled all of the coastlands of Europe at an early time. I mean, the Malaysians settled the whole Danube Valley, and they were Phoenicians. That, you know, they were called Phoenicians by the Greeks. I believe they were the northern tribes of Israel that had moved to Anatolia and later moved on into other parts of Europe. The Greeks were always looking for colonies, and the other peoples of the ancient world were always looking for arable land. Because there's a limited amount in Greece and Italy and Sicily. I mean, there's only so much. And the population grows, and you need more land. There's always a need for land. And arable land in Greece is actually scarce. It's not a very...
Oh, yes, it's a very arid country. I've been there.
Yeah, and it's very rocky. It's very mountainous and rocky. It's not the greatest country for an agrarian society.
But this message has taught me, and I'm sure others, that, you know, that the Bible, the Christian scriptures are much bigger than just that tiny little sandbox in the desert, you know. And
absolutely.
Judea and Israel, that was a stepping stone, that's where our ancestors started off. Well, of course, those they started it in Mesopotamia. The Fertile Crescent, which stretched up and down to Judea. But now we know the Bible, our scriptures are, with all the prophetic sections, it encompass, you know, most of the Western world. And that we can't be accused of being narrow-minded or small-minded or little Englanders or little Britons, because, you know, as I suggested, you know, from Isaiah 40 onwards, it wasn't talking about Palestine at all, which I think is mind-boggling. You know, it really brings that stuffy book, that big, complicated, obscure book of Isaiah to life, when you know that from 40 on it's talking about basically the British Isles and, Scandinavia and France. So, I mean, we ought to be able to sell our message because it's relevant. We're talking about our people. We're not talking about black-haired, strange people with funny eyes and ringlets and skull caps and long beards, you know.
Right. There are no yarmulkes in Scripture. That's for sure.
Which is quite scary and frightening, you know. So, in theory, our message should appeal widely, but I suppose we haven't made a great deal of headway, but maybe that's changing with the internet, you know. Are you getting much response, Bill, from other European countries? Or?
Well, I see them on my site. They're all over my site. I mean, if you look at that globe that I put on my site, I put it there purposely so I could track, you know, what sort of people were visiting my site and what they were looking at. And actually, R. Pete Wake found that, and it's an amazing tool. Every red dot on that globe means that somebody from that city or town or whatever, or whatever the dot represents, the region, has visited my site. And I had Chris DeGenia, by the conservative count, not the liberal count, the conservative count, because there's two, that my ISP offers, my hosting service offers, Chris DeGenia had 25,500 visits last year.
Last month?
Last year. First year, right?
Oh, yeah.
And amazing. I don't think that's bad for a first year for a website. Yeah, you know, I think that's pretty decent. And right now I'm getting, if I stay at the current pace that I'm at, I'll probably get over 100,000 visitors this year.
But if you Google Christian identity, you get a whole page of smear sites. And
well, right. You're going to get all the garbage. That's the way it
nasty,
is.
Nasty sites. And
right. And I'm trying to work out ways to do better with that, and it's very difficult. I am getting hits now from Google. I do have people that search for keywords, you know, phrases that have to do with Genesis 10 and with early European origins and things like that. And I do get hits now from Google. And I can track them now with this new database, you know, this database that I put up. This new Chris DeGenia site, the website, is actually an online database. It's not just a plain website. It's a lot more than that you don't really see because you're just seeing the front end of it. But it's an online database. It tells me every IP number of every document that people have looked at and how many times each document's been opened, and I can track who's been looking at it so that I know it's not just the same person going back to it all the time. I have a lot of data, useful data from it. That's going to help me, and I hope in the future present information a little better.
Does it record who downloads things as against just looking?
Well, I know who opens a document on the site, but I don't. Yeah, you know, as far as downloading files, all of the internet, all of the log files on the internet, I could get that information from my internet logs. It's just not as easily accessible. But every internet server on the net keeps track of the IP numbers of every file accessed. And a lot of people don't realize that. And they stay on the server, that they stay for about 6 to 8 months. On my hosting, and a lot of them probably keep them longer, and maybe some not quite as long.
Yes.
But those logs stay on the server for 6 to 8 months, yes. Every file that you download, it's on the internet. It's recorded in a log on one ISP or another.
Yes.
Your IP address.
And I'm the British government now have ordered the providers to keep a record for 12 months of every email and website.
Yes, you have to use that encrypted search. That one you told me about, Bill.
this is done on, under the guise of security and prevention of terrorism.
Well, right, and you don't realize that this is going on unless, usually, unless you're a web, you know, unless you have a website and you pay attention to the data on your on the server for your site. But it's something that's always gone on. To a certain extent, that data's always been saved ever since the invention of the internet. And I know because I was there when the internet was invented. I mean, I was one of the. I was in the technology field at the time, and I was on the internet. I had my own website in 93, my first website. And that's how I got all these web, you know, having a knowledge of the internet. That's how I've only been basically out in public for a year now, and that's how I have all these websites already, because I had a knowledge before I had my my own sojourn.
Did you have a computer, Bill, when you were detained?
No, I didn't see a computer from 1996 until December last year.
Well, did you ask for one?
No, you just can't have one. I mean, it's absolutely out of the question.
No one? Did none of the prisoners?
No, out of the question. In the federal prisons here, it's out of the question.
Well, I'm not sure what the situation is here. I think Tia Tefi would know if prisoners allowed laptops.
Yeah.
There.
No, I could have nothing at all like that from 96 until I got home.
And were you allowed sort of identity books or?
Oh, yeah. Well, I had 100 books. I mean, we're only allowed 5. I always found ways to have lots of books.
What I wonder was I wonder
hiding places for them.
Well, yeah, I actually rented space in other people's lockers when I had to. I always had lots of books.
But could you request books from the authorities?
They had an interlibrary loan service, but it was very difficult to get anything real. Yeah, you know, if you wanted the latest Michener novel, it wasn't a problem. But if you wanted to read Apollodorus Rhodius or something like that, it probably wasn't going to happen.
Because in Belfast, during the 30 years troubled phase, the famous or infamous Mays prison became quite famous for the soft lifestyle and the fact that prisoners could get access to any book or any game or any video.
Yeah, well, I was in a place that was very austere, let's put it that way.
Yes. So I just wondered, was because you couldn't get good books, good Christian books, maybe they were censored, and therefore... Well, you had to study the classics as a sort of parallel.
No, I studied the classics by choice.
Yes.
Because Christian books, there's only one Christian book as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
You know, most of the books hawked as Christian books are just garbage.
Yeah.
I studied the classics are... I studied the classics because I wanted to learn the identity story for myself firsthand. I didn't want it from I didn't want to take Leslie Swift's word for it or Raymond Katz's word for it. I wanted to prove it on my own.
Yeah.
That's the attitude I got as soon as I found identity.
Why did Raymond Katz not take in the two-seed line message?
I can't answer that. I didn't know Raymond Katz. Clifton knew him, so maybe Clifton can explain it. You know, one day I'll try to get Clifton to come on here.
He
I don't know. It's
he did write widely. He was very prolific. He was very humble. I think I got the impression he was a humble chap. I saw a few sort of old videos when he was sort of trying to explain some of his books, but. He seemed to be one seed line, but of course he was working earlier. He hadn't seen as much fulfilled prophecy that we have the good fortune to have witnessed. You know, the same with old Wilson, you know, in 1860, 70.
John Wilson.
Reverend Wilson, who sort of kick-started the British Israel message here.
I think that was more like the 1840s.
Yeah.
Because I know the George Moore book was printed in 1860, and he followed Wilson. I mean, you know, Wilson was before him.
Right, and you reckon the other chap was a bit dodgy?
I think Hine, I think, Hine, you know...
H-I-N-E, you know?
Right, I think he was a straight kike.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. I don't, and I think that... Chris can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that he basically corroborates that, or he, agreed with that, or told me that, or something. There was some sort of agreement there, I think.
Yes, he was a banker, apparently, but he was buried in some obscure, fairly obscure graveyard in London.
Well, you know, Sharon Turner actually, I read Sharon Turner's books. You know, I know them firsthand. I read the history of Anglo-Saxons. And he describes the relationship of the German people with the Anglo-Saxons. And he would fully agree that they were blood brothers, that they weren't – there's no difference between a German and an Englishman. I'm sorry. And there's not. And I'm not saying that because I'm half German and half English. I'm saying it because I read all the classics.
Yeah.
You cannot distinguish between a – all right. Yeah, you know, England, I believe the main settlements of England are the Phoenicians, who were the northern tribes of Israel, in the west of, you know, in the south and the west of England, and they were all pushed into the west when the Anglo-Saxons came. But it's not – the Anglo-Saxons did not – how did Sussex Man and Tia get muted? I didn't mute these people. I'm not paying attention, and they're all muted, and I don't – oh, they all had to dial in again. Oh, no. Sorry about that. Okay. Well, anyway, you know, they were mostly Phoenicians at first, and they're all Israel. And there may have been Japhethite waves like the Bell Beaker people and earlier people that are Japhethites or pre-Israelite white people, okay, in Britain. At times, and in Germany, definitely, and in the Iberian Peninsula, definitely, and in France, definitely. Japhethites and other pre-Israelite white people were in those areas, okay? But for the most part, the preponderance of the civilization in Roman times had come from the Phoenicians and the Britons may well, you know, a lot of them may well have been Trojans, and they seem to have been. Now, the second wave of people into Britain, and not it's not really the second, but it's the second major wave of people of a different tongue, but they were the same. They were basically the same people. The Kimry, they didn't come. A lot of people try to, a lot of people even in British identity try to call the first Phoenician Britons and the Trojan Britons by the name Kimry, and that's wrong. That's not right to do at all. The Kimry are the same Kimmerians who settled the coasts of Germany that we find in Roman times, and they crossed the channel, a portion of them, and they are the Kimry, and they didn't come to Britain until after 400 BC. And then Britain has no other infusion of, you know, major infusion of people until Roman times. And after that, until the Anglo-Saxons. And Bede writes about, you know, he writes about the Britons being the neighbors of the Germans in England, in Britain.
Yeah. I think, was it Julius Caesar or Tacitus or Bede said that the Caledonians, I think it was Tacitus.
Tacitus describes the Caledonians and the Picts are Germans. All right, Bede says that the Picts came from Scythia.
Yeah, he said the Caledonians were long-legged.
He describes them as tall, red-haired, white-skinned, and long-legged. Yes, he does.
Like the Germans, yeah.
Yes, he does.
So that's very significant. I mean, he's well quoted Tacitus. But of course, that some of the later historians, Gildas and Nennius and Geoffrey of Monmouth,
and Bede considered the Irish to be Scots.
Bede seems to be politically acceptable, but the other ones are usually dismissed as fantasists.
Well, right, but Bede wrote, you know, about the Irish being a good people, and he spoke very, very well about them.
Yes, I'm reading a bit of Bede at the minute.
Yeah, well, what I'm saying is that there's things in Bede that even the British Israel people gloss over. You
yes.
know, Bede spoke very well about the Germans, and he spoke very well about the Irish.
And essentially the Scots and the Irish are the same, basically, is what you're saying, right?
Yes. That and you have, you know, nobody stayed in one place. You know, the Danes invaded England and the Danes invaded Ireland. So you have Danish elements. You have Scythian German elements. And they all, we all came from the tribes of Israel.
Yeah, it's and when you realize that, it really does, when you look back through history and you realize that, it really does kind of make you sad when you see all this white-on-white wars that have been fought in more recent times, you know.
Absolutely.
From the American Civil War to the conflict with, you know, the conflicts over in Europe, it's just white-on-white, you know, just.
Yeah, right. Well, I think
wars,
there were wars between the English and the French all through the Middle Ages, but I think that the first big evil Rothschild manipulated modern war was definitely the or I shouldn't say Rothschild, I should say Jewish banker manipulated modern war, because the Rothschilds weren't really risen to prominence yet, is the 30 Years' War. And the Jews profited greatly from the 30 Years' War.
Yeah. And gosh, I don't have to tell you guys the tragedy down in South Africa, you know, what they've done to that place.
The Boer War, do you mean, yeah.
Right. Yeah, Boer War. Yeah.
Ever since the 30 Years' War, the Jews have had practically carte blanche ability to cause wars between the powers of Europe.
This is one thing that's affected me, just thinking, realizing over the last 200 years that most of the wars, if not all of them, have been stirred up by basically foreign evil agents provocateurs, and that we've been slaughtering our cousins. And in the last 100 years, we've been doing it industrially, you know, not just with swords and
absolutely
clubs, but with rapid-fire machine guns and massive 1,000-pound bombs. And it makes me very angry how we've been deceived and dragged into this.
Now it's more sophisticated, murdering us through medicines and so-called.
Oh, yeah, all kinds of ways.
And
the
chemicals in our water and food.
I don't remember where I wrote it, but I wrote last week that, you know, World War II was the English-speaking man's darkest moment. Because what we joined with international Judaism and communism to destroy Christian Germany.
Yes.
And of course, when we were kids, it was drilled into us that the Germans were very evil people, you know, as well as cowboy films. The next favorite films was, you know, the army films, you know, of the evil Germans, you know.
Right, it was all Jewish propaganda.
Yes, the image created was, you know, of the Nazi senior officer, immaculately dressed, but with a really cruel streak, you know, who was utterly ruthless. And
well, I think that Edward Hein was a proponent, what was a component of that same propaganda. I think that they used Edward Hein to pollute this new British Israel faith that was coming up against
Germany. In my GOG slides, I mentioned that in fact the BIWF was used as a vehicle to gain control of, for the Zionist cause of gaining control of Palestine.
Yes, it was.
To say they were the lost tribe, you know, giving them a homeland. And it's interesting that just after the war, in the BI movement in Britain, you know, they could fill halls with 1,000 people. Then all of a sudden it collapsed. Well, obviously they achieved their purposes, so it could be disbanded.
Right. Absolutely. There's no doubt.
And also the BIWF, you know, Allenby's taking on Jerusalem, you know, is a major move forward in the Israelite world. Well, in fact, I think it was a sort of gong saying this is the end, you know, the time of the end of the Israelite nation empires, because immediately 1917, that's when you had the Russian Revolution, shortly after Southern Ireland was partitioned, and then after the war we lost India, and then rapidly all our other colonies. So the Germans lost their territories, the French lost theirs, the Belgian, the Danish.
I see Adolf Hitler as the last national leader to be able to stand up against the Jews. And look at what we did to him.
Yes, well...
And we should be ashamed of that. World War II is not our greatest moment.
Interesting thing David Irvin said when I went to his lecture in London the other week was that under the Freedom of Information, the Queen Mother's diaries came available, and I think he was one of the first to look at them. And one of the things he mentioned was that she detested Churchill, and she keeps going on, he went down in her estimation when he refused to take up Hitler's peace overtures in 1940, and also evidently King George hated him too.
She's basically a modern-day Hezekiah, because she should have said something about that then. You know, she should have opened her mouth about it then. Why remain quiet about about bringing, it's her nation that he brought into war.
Well, of course, there's the, I forget the proper name of it now, when the monarch sends the phone in Britain, he signs away all his rights, income from all his estates, and in return he gets a stipend from the government. What do they call that, Alan? You know what it's called? I can't think of the name, but anyway, basically they're just a rubber stamp, you know.
We all know what happened because of Yahweh's permissive will, but we still have hate evil.
Monarchy, but the monarchy still has prerogatives. Is that the word?
It's virtually been...
The Queen, I think, still has some powers, but she doesn't appear to have tried to use them. Or some people would say that she's terrified, she's afraid that she'll be rubbed out if she does speak out, you know.
Oh, yeah, if the Queen goes against the Jews, she's toast. I understand that. We all understand that.
But nevertheless, I personally get frustrated. And there's lots of people blogging in some of the better sort of right-of-center newspapers and appealing, you know, either for a coup d'etat by the army to get rid of this wicked socialist government, or for the Queen to speak out or do something, you know. I've never seen this before. It's just in the last year, as our incompetent and utterly corrupt Marxist government.
Well, we have the same problem right here, right now. I mean, with this also known as Obama administration, you know, it's the same problem.
Yes, United States seem to have gone down rapidly, and you've nearly caught us up here. You know, you're nearly at the same stage of communism as we are in Britain here. We always looked up to the United States as you know, the one remaining bastion of sensible free enterprise and freedom of speech and
That's about gone, isn't it?
But it's
about gone. What do you mean about? It's way gone.
I mean, since Jimmy Carter days and Clinton. You've almost caught us up here.
they want to fix us from the Marxism we've had in the past by voting for more in the future. I mean, it makes no sense at all, except that people get everything they know from those same five or six Jewish-controlled media companies. Well, whatever side of the ocean you're on, that's where they got all their, you know, most Americans, everything they know came from CNN and USA Today. And they think they're
Fox
smart.
Fox freaking news, right?
And they think they're smart. Yeah, and Fox News is the only alternative. And people that watch Fox News talk about how great it is. Well, yeah, right, okay. That's like, would you rather kill yourself with a razor or with a shotgun, you know?
Yes.
Is what that boils down to.
But I mean, 50 years ago, people read books and people knew how to use libraries and borrow books. And there still were some good books available, but when I used to visit the local charity shops, and I would often find some interesting books, but they were discarded by the city libraries and just dumped in the charity shop. And obviously, from the titles, that they were they've been carefully selected and extracted, removed. And then just either dumped or burnt or dumped in charity shops. Because our town centres now, have changed greatly. I mean, they used to be very interesting shops and little hardware places and small family businesses. But now it's either building societies or banks or finance companies or mobile phone shops.
And it's the same thing here.
Or you know, chains, the big corporation, international corporation chains, or charity shops, because most ordinary shopkeepers can't afford the rent and the rates, you know, the council tax. So the charity shops get that paid for, and that's why they're surviving. But, of course, a lot of shoppers now are heading out to the out-of-town shopping centres, so the inner cities are dying slowly.
We have the same problem, same exact problem.
But that's a bit off the subject. I mean, my basic point was that people, before TV took over, people used to get access to other information, you know, good books, old books that were written by basically decent, honest Christian men and women, and they could they had a better perspective on the news that came on the radio. But now very few people read books other than just trashy novels, pulp fiction, and therefore that they're almost entirely reliant on the TV and radio for their information. I think Les number 7 asked a question.
He's asking do we know anything about Christ living in England?
Yes, well, there's a lot of information.
Right. I'm skeptical of a lot of it, but it is out there, and I don't comment on it because of my skepticism.
Yeah. Well, there's equal evidence that he was in Scotland as well. Because also Titus Pilot was actually educated in Fortingall in Scotland.
Yeah, there were definitely strong connections between England, you know, especially with the coming of Caesar, between England and Palestine. And there were strong connections in ancient times between England and Palestine that are very clear, except that you know, the Tyrians had basically been the mother city of the Carthaginians, and the Carthaginians had strong connections with Tyre right until all the way down until Alexander the Great destroyed the seacoast city, destroyed the island city, and that there were strong connections all through that time that the Greeks and Romans didn't really write a lot about, because the Tyrians had great, the Greeks and Romans mentioned it, but they didn't go into details because they didn't know them, because of the amount of control the Tyrians had over the Western Mediterranean. The Greeks didn't even dare go that way. If the Greeks tried to sail past Phoenician ships in the Western Mediterranean, until the time of the Punic Wars, when Rome finally, you know, defeated the Carthaginians, but until that time, that they were just, their ships would be taken, and they would all be taken and sold as slaves. The Greeks couldn't even go in that direction. So a lot of the early history of Britain is lost on us for that reason, that it didn't get into the classical records like it should have, because of the competition in trade and the Phoenician struggle to keep Britain a secret for so many centuries.
Now, why would they keep Britain a secret?
To keep the Greeks and the Romans out of there.
Okay.
It was about the tin mining, wasn't it? The tin trade.
Right, it was about the tin trade, and it was about the natural resources.
Because it was called the Cassiterides, which is tin in Greek, I seem to recall.
Cassiterides. Mm-hmm. And yeah. You know, Strabo wrote about... Yeah, you know, it was such a famous effort by the Phoenicians to keep the British Isles a secret that Strabo wrote about a certain Phoenician captain whom the Romans tried to follow, and he knew the Romans were following him to find out the source of the tin, so he beached his ship rather than have the Romans follow him to Britain. Yeah, you know, and that's right in Strabo.
Wow. Okay.
Who was writing about 25 AD, but he was writing about an older account and copying it from an earlier writer.
25 AD? You mean 25 BC?
No, Strabo died in 25 AD. He wrote, you know, so I don't know exactly when during his lifetime he wrote, but he died in 25 AD.
Okay. Gotcha.
And what a lot of people don't realise, they think Welsh was only spoken in Wales, but when the time of when the Romans were here, Welsh was spoken all over, at least southern Britain and Wales. It'd be the Gaelic variety to the north. And
right.
It's only when the Saxons came in, they drove the at that time, the Breton-speaking, or Welsh, as it's called
right,
now.
Right, well, Welsh is
into
Britain,
the,
right. Welsh
into
is
the, yeah.
Welsh is
and also, as a consequence of that, what a lot of people don't know is that all our ancient history was written in the Welsh language, and it was sort of taken to Wales and other parts, probably some to Cornwall. And then when the edict came out that English was to be the common language throughout the church rather than Latin, that also encompassed the official documents, all was to be in English. So the bureaucrats of the day started burning all the old Welsh records, you know, in the Welsh language. That's how we lost a lot of our history.
I'm sure. It's a shame the things that were done have been done in the name of religion and in the name of our own national squabbles, tribal squabbles, however you want to quantify them, civil wars. I mean, the Danans that destroyed Troy were basically Israelites, just like the Trojans that got their city destroyed, you know? This is an old problem with us. It's not new.
Yeah.
I mean, I would bet that the Canaanites were probably behind it then, too.
Yeah. Well, like the big library at Alexandria that was ransacked.
Yeah, we've lost a lot of culture, but we have to pick up the pieces, eh? And I'm sure one day Yahweh will fill in the rest for us.
So there was, I did read somewhere, whether it's true or not, that only some of the records of Alexandria were actually saved and some in Greece, and where, I suppose because it was a sort of Western Greek Orthodox tradition, that a lot of the records were taken to Moscow, and somebody said Moscow is full of underground caverns and tunnels, and this man came to some locked room and there were all these books, and he was sworn to secrecy, not to tell anybody where they were.
I'm sure there is probably a lot of good stuff handed down by the Greeks that Moscow inherited.
Yeah.
Because, you know, under the czars of the 17th and 18th centuries, 16th, 15th, 16th, 17th, and 18th centuries, Russia was basically the heir of the Greek Orthodox culture that was destroyed by the Ottoman Turks.
Yeah. And there was a good article, I forget where I got it from, that was by a Greek Orthodox person about the Essenes, saying that there were two lots. There was the one of where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found, and there was another.
I hate to say it, but the Dead Sea Scroll authors were not Essenes.
Yeah. But this Greek Orthodox person was saying that, in fact, there was another lot somewhere. I can't remember exactly where it's somewhere there where Christ was, you know, up that part of the, not on the Dead Sea, but actually up towards, beyond west of Jerusalem.
Joe, you know, the Dead Sea Scroll writers were extremely, vehemently anti-Roman.
Yeah.
And the Essenes that we see in Josephus aren't really anti-Roman at all. And Josephus describes a fourth sect of Judeans that is extremely anti-Roman, founded by Judas the Galilean. And Josephus talks about them, and they, to me, they fit the Dead Sea Scrolls writers like a glove. And I believe that.
And also in this article, it says from their records, Christ hardly ever went into, I think they said there was only about two records of him having gone to Jerusalem. Otherwise, he spent all his time in Galilee and other places, but not in Judea.
Well, just because it's not recorded in the gospel doesn't mean it didn't happen. Yeah, you know, most of the gospels, all right, let's take John. There's three Passovers mentioned, or in John. And there's another feast mentioned that's probably a Passover. And there are other feasts mentioned that are definitely in between feasts, like the first fruits and the tabernacles. And those Passovers are mentioned in John all between chapters 1 and 11. Okay? So we see the first 11 chapters of John covers like a 2 or 3 year period. And the last 10 chapters of John covered like a couple of weeks, are all from his Christ, the last weeks of Christ. Now, just because it's not mentioned every time he went to Jerusalem for a feast doesn't mean he didn't, because it's clearly evident in the New Testament that they were observing the commandment, which is in the law, that all men of Israel, all the men in Israel, have to appear 3 times a year at the temple. I mean, that's clear in the scripture, and it's clear that they were observing it, that Christ observed it. And he was also in the feast he was in Jerusalem for one Hanukkah, and at least one Hanukkah, and that's in John chapter 11, where he's in Jerusalem at the Feast of the Restoration. That's actually that feast wasn't a required feast to be in Jerusalem at any time. But it is in the book of Maccabees that they were going after they restored the temple from when the Seleucids tried to mess it up, you know, and sacrifice pig on the altar and all that, that they would celebrate a feast, and that was the Feast of the Restoration. And it's not a biblical feast, but it was instituted by the Maccabees as a celebration. So Christ was in Jerusalem for that in the winter. So he was definitely in Jerusalem on occasions other than the most evident in scripture. And I would, before I tried to create any doctrine based on any of that, it would require a lot of study.
I see that still none of our continental friends have been able to dial in yet.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, but we'll be back here on the third Thursday of the month, I guess. I'll schedule another one of these. As long as this time is amenable to everybody and.
Oh, yes. Well, I think, you know, it is for the continent, because they're 1 hour difference to us. You know, where we start at 7, they'll be starting at 8. And I did pass it on to some people in South Africa. I was hoping they might have joined in. It would have been, of course, it would have been a bit later, 9 o'clock, I think, South African time.
Is South Africa behind Germany in time?
Yes. Oh, wait a minute. Is it behind?
It's ahead.
Ahead, yes. 2 hours ahead of us.
2 hours ahead of you? And Germany's an hour ahead of you?
Yes.
Wow, I didn't realize that South Africa was
Well, it's going due south, you know, it's on the more or less, it's not so far out from the Greenwich Median, you know, because, you know, it's going due south. The time changes when you travel from east to west, doesn't it, rather than from south to north.
Yeah, I think sometimes when I look at a map, my head is crooked. I didn't realize South Africa was that far east.
No, it's not. It isn't. It's more or less fairly well in line with the UK, but slightly, I think probably slightly, it must be to the east.
Yeah, if they're ahead in time, it must be to the east.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that they
Mind you, when you look at the time zones, they're not always straight. You know, they have some kinks in them, you know.
Yeah, that's true, too. I think the Jews drew those lines.
Yeah.
They're all crooked.
And, mind you, it would be difficult to have a time when everybody could join in, you know, like perhaps in Australia and New Zealand.
Oh, yeah, right. It's the middle of the night right there. I mean, that's the way it is. I can't, you know, nobody can make everybody happy. I just, you know, a lot of people in Europe have an interest in my site and have an interest in these programs. So I thought I would offer to...
very good of
be
you,
here
though.
For one afternoon a couple of times a month, just for fellowship and answer questions, and basically that's what it's about, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's very good because, as you know, I mean, when you have most of your talking programs, that'd be sort of 1 o'clock and 2 a.m. in the morning our time, you know.
I think
yeah, I know
great
that's
idea.
Difficult. But Sussex Man, no, I'm sorry, Dave UK has no problem staying up all night.
Well, is he on the, he's on the night shift, is he? Does he work, sleep during the day and work during the night?
Oh, quite often. I'm sorry, yeah. Tia, what did you say?
Oh, I was just saying that. I thought the time and the frequency is great. I think it's a great idea. I was just being supportive. That's all.
Okay. Well, I'll be here twice a month then.
Well,
see how that goes.
We'll take you up on it.
Yeah.
Yes, we certainly will.
Sorry about ask the publisher to perhaps put it in the new, in the Ensign magazine.
Yeah, that'll work.
Yeah.
Yes, good idea.
Probably have to give a, I don't know, idiot's guide of how to log in, you know.
Yeah, we'll have to do something for Matthew to be able to get in here. It would have been nice.
I mean, I don't know if talk show people would know whether there's an alternative way for the Continentals who don't have a hash or pound key on their phone.
Well, I think the best thing would be that VoIP, that voice over IP, to get that working.
How does that work? You just
I never
pound.
Tried it. I don't know. I'm a dummy with some of that stuff, you know? I mean,
yeah.
I didn't have that stuff in 96. And I haven't had the time to play with everything, all those toys yet.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to say VoIP. You're trying to get VoIP going there?
Well, he can't seem to get in on the telephone.
Okay.
A German fellow that wanted to call in today that he just can't seem to be able to connect on the phone.
Oh, that's a shame.
But I'll be here we'll be here in 2 weeks, and we'll try again. And maybe he'll be able to check it out, or somebody will be able to help him between now and then. I don't know.
We'll have to perhaps give him a ring tomorrow and find out if they have the pound key on his Skype menu when it comes up. But you said it's difficult getting in with Skype.
Well, I had nothing but a hard time. I mean, it was easy for me to dial in, but I had all kinds of feedback, and it was horrible, and I thought I could never host a call like this or even call in as a guest. The feedback was just terrible.
Yeah, I didn't realize. I thought all the phones around the world were standard, you know.
Yeah, well,
I didn't
so
know that.
I, but when you're an American, yeah. You're just obnoxious and arrogant. You think everybody's like you.
Yeah.
That's how Americans are.
I have to send Matthew an English telephone as a present, see if
yes,
it can work there.
Well, I'm not at all techie, but all I've done when I've logged in is click on the shoe phone.
On the what?
Oh, there's a little shoe phone at the bottom right-hand corner, and I click on that.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
Oh.
Is that as you're logging in?
No, I log in with my ID. And then a screen comes up with this little shoe in the corner. And I click on that to connect, and I get straight through. And then
well, that gets you
the
forum.
Yeah, it does, and that's what I'm using.
But that doesn't get you on a telephone. He's having a hard time connecting on a telephone.
Yes, I know that. But I'm saying that I've never had any success on the phone, so this is why I use this method, and I would have thought he could as well.
So you can get a phone connection on that, can you, as well?
Yes, it must be that.
Is that how you're talking to us right now? Is that how you're talking to us right now?
Yes, and I have done throughout the show.
Are you on Skype?
Well, this is what I say. I'm not at all techie. I'm just clicking on what's on the screen, and I'm talking to you.
No, did you dial? You dialed a number to talk to us, though.
No, I didn't dial a number.
Okay, so how does it work, Judith?
I haven't a clue.
Oh, you're more technically advanced than all the rest of us, Judith.
I never tried it.
Well, there's this little shoe in the right-hand corner.
Yeah.
With a telephone going into the shoe, and I click on that after I've successfully got my ID approved. And then I'm through and I'm into the forum, and then if I want to come out, I click on it to disconnect, and I'm back in again in a few seconds when I click back on again. So I don't know whether my program...
Oh, yeah, so your computer is dialing the landline.
I don't know what it's doing.
Yeah.
But I'm not actually doing any. I'm not selecting any numbers, that's what I'm trying to say.
Well, we have to explain that process to Matthew.
I'll certainly try. Because that would obviate the problem regarding the pound sign or the hash key or whatever.
See, I'm never hardly a caller on these programs, so I never get to experiment like this. I mean, I don't want to risk and not making Eli's program on time on Fridays and Saturdays. So I just call in the normal way. I don't get to play with IP and all that stuff. You know, if I was just a coming here to listen, I might start experimenting.
Could ask Matthew to practice on the Sunday show at 5.
Well, if Matthew's still here, maybe he could click on the Talk Show Live phone at the bottom of the screen and where the telephone icon is and see what happens.
Yeah, I think
he's... Why don't you try that, Matthew? I think he's still here. He's 15 now.
I think he's guest 20. Is he guest 24?
Are you there, Matthew? No. Oh, I see. Yeah, it probably. I'm sure that might be. If you click on it, it's using itself, to dial through your computer. But then you probably have to have their software installed, do you? Or does it install it automatically?
I have downloaded it, yes.
Oh, well, that's probably why
I haven't seen. That wasn't a choice. It wasn't a choice. It wouldn't let me into the program tonight unless I downloaded it.
Oh, I never got that.
Ah.
No.
I'm going to have to experiment on some other people's programs tonight since I have the night off. Well, I never really have a night off. I got to post documents and I got to catch up Clifton site. Just about there. Then I got to figure out how to move it to Christogenia. That's my next move.
So I wonder how you have any time, Bill, with all the time you're on the radio to do your website.
I don't have any time. You don't know how long it takes to prepare for some of the programs I do.
Yeah, that's what.
It takes some of those programs I do with Brian, it takes me 6 hours to prepare for it, to do the reading requisite to do an intelligence program.
How much preparation does it take?
For a poll program, it takes me about 2 hours because I know the material and I have all my notes. Yeah, and I go in and I read what we're going to cover and I pull any historical data that I need to pull that I want to talk about. And because I have a lot of it in my head, but I never feel like I'm going to be prepared enough. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And for the Daniel programs took longer. They took twice as long. And the Gospel of John program last week took me about 2 hours to prepare. to make sure I had the notes that I wanted to discuss and the Greek references and everything I want to discuss. I like to have my I's crossed and my T's dotted, and my T's crossed and my I's dotted. But you know, I only use about half my notes for a program, if that. That's usually the way it works. And then the other half of the stuff comes from Eli and talking about things that I can't possibly plan on, you know, because you don't know which way it's going to go.
Well, that's
maybe
true,
about
yeah.
half of the program's extemporaneous and about half of it's planned. It's hard to tell. I guess it
does. So it comes over very well over here anyway.
Oh, thanks.
I would imagine the Sunday evening programs must take a lot more time in preparation.
Right, because
must
I
be
don't
a lot
know,
of reading.
I don't know the material as well, and I honestly don't. You know, I mean, some of it I knew pretty well, but a lot, most of it I don't.
Hang on, I've got Matthew on the... Hello? Yes? Yes.
I'm still here. This is the
show stop. No, it's still on. Judith was saying that there's a shoe that comes up, and if you... click on it, it dials it through on the computer.
Oh, well, I lost the complete information. There was no connection for me anymore.
Yeah. I should mute him, but I'm curious about what's going on.
Yeah, he said he's lost his connection.
Yeah, of course.
Oh, German engineering, there's nothing like it.
No, try again. It's still on.
Okay, I'll try.
Yeah, greetings, he says. He's going to try again.
Okay, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
He's going to try again.
Okay, he
couldn't get through and he thought the show had finished.
We're running into our third hour here, I'll tell you that.
Okay. We'll just give him a few minutes, see if he does get in.
Yeah, we'll give him a few minutes. I mean, I don't care how long we go. I've done five.
But he
hours.
Might not have a shoe on his. I don't know. He can have a go anyway.
I've had quite a few marathons with Martin Lindstedt. Last week was a marathon. That was a fun
one. Oh, yeah.
And get a little punchy after a while. And I've
it
done
sounds
five
a bit,
hours
bit of a rough diamond, as we say in this country.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
All the ins and outs of the identity movement of preachers in the USA.
Well, right. It's good that people hear about them and they're warned
yeah.
by them. You know, because
yeah.
a lot of them are unscrupulous. But we have a lot of unscrupulous people amongst our numbers. Or to claim to be amongst our numbers.
Well, we got a few here in the UK as well.
And most of them are probably shills paid for by the enemy.
Yeah.
Project COINTELPRO and all that. I mean, the government, there was a government plan to purposely undermine any political resistance groups. Called Operation COINTELPRO, which is absolutely yeah. incredible. It's the exact opposite of the ideals that this nation was founded on. The political resistance groups they should have undermined were the damn hippie radicals in the 60s that wrecked this country.
Yeah.
That were all Jews and from the Frankfurt School, the Jews of the Frankfurt School. That's the group they should have undermined. Instead, what they really did was they undermined any possible conservative political opposition or any possible, you know, constitutional reactionary opposition. In other words, they undermine the good people and let the evil bastards get away with anything they want. That's what they did.
Oh, yes, that's why they work. Yeah, we saw June and Alan were about to tell you we got plenty of those in this country in the identity movement.
Yeah, it's a shame Betty never got through. It would have been nice to hear from her.
From who?
Betty.
Oh.
I'm sure she'll try next time or figure it out or something.
Oh, yeah. Well, she did send me, she did put a note up on the screen that she'd been trying to get in. But she said she'd never done it before, so, you know, it's probably new to her. I tried to explain to her exactly what to do, but...
We'll get it ironed out. This is only the first run. It's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
There'll be other opportunities.
We'll have so many people putting in that we won't have a chance to say a word. And that will be lovely.
Well, that's good. I mean, it's about Q&A and fellowship and
yes.
Resolving any questions we might have.
Oh, somebody just said 15 is not Matthew. I don't know either.
I've been doing an open forum for a few weeks now, every Monday. But it sometimes it goes well, and sometimes it really it could need help, but that's okay. But
yeah,
does
Dave UK have a phone in? I haven't heard from him.
Well, he hasn't phoned in, but I mean, he's there, you know.
Yeah.
He's there quite often.
I've
never spoken to Dave UK yet. I haven't spoken to him yet. We're going to have to send him an English phone, too.
Yeah. Grows up in the wilds of Scotland somewhere, is he?
Yeah, I like Dave. He's a good guy. I see some of his posts on my forum are pretty good. He doesn't take any shit from Troublemaker and some of the other clowns, which is good.
I can't understand somebody, you know, taking a name like Troublemaker, you know. It just sort of tells everybody what he is, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, I haven't come to the conclusion. I've engaged him to try to... Yeah, you know, show so that he could show people what he is basically why I engage him. And he's from the school of the Paul bashers and the Antichrist Yahwists. You know, they won't call themselves Christians. They deny Christ. They're Yahwists, and they bash Paul and they try to rewrite the Bible to form to match their illy formed opinions. And that's what Troublemaker does, and he's trying to act rational and sound like he's taking the high road. But when you get underneath what the propaganda that he's spreading, he's denying half of the New Testament. That's what it boils down to. And he's evasive, and he won't admit it because he knows that he'll be rejected as soon as he does. So it's a backup door approach to pollute identity. And these people have been at it for years. I you know, Clifton Emmaheiser has addressed them at length, and Eli's addressed them at length, and Ken Lentz addressed them at length, and they reject all correction.
And you hear a lot of these identity people, they start off good, and then they gradually drift away until they... come to, you know, turn out to be just a normal Judeo-Christian preacher, you know.
Well, yeah, that happens quite often, too. You know, they start making excuses for non-Adamic people, and they start making excuses for half-breeds, and all of a sudden what you have is you have Calvin. You don't have...
Well, I'm just thinking of, you know, Betty was in the... Worldwide Church, you know, like the Armstrong group, and there was lots of congregations, I think, in this country, and evidently most of those have thrown out the identity message, and they're just sort of normal.
Oh, yeah, they forgot the wrong half of it, didn't they? They forgot the wrong half of the message.
Yeah.
Yes, most of them have thrown out the identity message, and it's a shame. But that's because they were never really well-founded in it. Yeah, you know, that church was actually a stepping stone for a lot of people to come into identity as long as they got out of it in time. You know?
Yeah.
If they didn't get out of it in time.
You know, Betty was telling me that they weren't allowed to look at any other literature than their own literature.
Yeah, and that's a cult, isn't it? Isn't that what a cult
is? Yeah.
But
if you've got the truth, you don't worry about what other people say.
Right. And they call us a cult.
Yeah.
And we're the anti-cult.
Yeah.
We look at everybody.
Well, I've always said, I think nearly every identity person I've come across, I would say nearly everyone has a slightly different view from the other. I mean, we're not all like the Judeo-Christians, sort of a cloned mindset. We've all got our own independent views.
Well, right. And often that's good. And usually it's healthy. However, usually it's because a lot of us have brought in baggage from where we came from.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of Catholic baggage and identity. There's a lot of Baptist baggage and identity. Methodist, Anglican, whatever. But, yeah, a lot of it's because people bring in that they don't forget some of the errors of their that they were brought up with or they find it difficult to.
Well, also, too, I mean, you've got something to discuss. You know, at an identity meeting, there's lots of conversation. But, you know, in an ordinary church, you know, they might have tea afterwards and it's all just small talk. They don't talk anything about the Bible and that, you know.
No, they don't. They don't test the scriptures, examine the scriptures, that's for sure.
No.
Because you just got to take it for granted that your pastor is going to tell you everything right. And
well, their view is the pastor knows everything, you know. We go on what he says, you know, so it must be right, you know. And they're frightened that, you know, if they come to any different view, they think of their pastor has been a learned man because he's been to Bible college, so they didn't contradict him, you know.
Right, and Eli and I disagree all the time, but we still talk to each other.
Oh, yes.
It's, yeah, you're right. We're not supposed to be a cult. I don't want to be a leader of anything. Especially of a cult. That's not the way we're supposed to be. That's not brotherly at all, being a cult. We have one leader. We're all brethren. As soon as
that old book about Genesis, you know, I think I sent you a copy that Eli had on his site about the two seed line, that book, Genesis Discovered, printed in the 1800s. I sent him the copy of the one I formatted, and I got an email back, and he thought I've come across a rare book in London because he said mine didn't have a front cover. And I told him, you know, I'd reformatted it. I think it was Joe. He said, "How dare you deceive us?" After Eli, I thought you come across a rare book yourself. Yeah, because I put that front cover on, you know. He thought it was another book. He said, "Oh, mine didn't have a front cover." Then I replied to him and told him I'd reformatted it from his website. Right, it doesn't look, I don't know what's happened to Bill. I don't think he's going to make it somehow.
I'm afraid not. It's been almost 15 minutes, I think.
Yeah. So I think we ought to wrap it up now and
to you. I mean, it's up to, if you want to wrap it up, and we'll be back here on the 22nd, I think.
Well, my dog's fidgeting because it's bedtime, you know.
Okay.
There's more than it's your dog's bedtime, Chris.
Yeah.
There's somebody in the north of England's past their bedtime.
Yeah.
But it's been very enjoyable. It's a pity we didn't get Matthew, but maybe next time we will.
And we'll get him next time, and we'll do this in a couple of weeks. And, you know, if you just want to know anything about in particular. Yeah, you know, if you want to discuss anything in particular, just anything specific, just drop me an email.
Yeah, cool day. And hopefully we might be able to bring a few more people. I mean, I was thinking of the chap in Denmark, you know, Mikkel Krog.
Yes.
Well, there was somebody here from Sweden today or Denmark? In the
Denmark world. Could be.
He may still
well,
be.
Well, then it might be Sven from Norway. No, he's in Norway. Alan's friend.
Well,
Steve,
I get website visits from all those places, so but I don't know who's who, and I don't get, you know, I'm sure a lot of it is probably none of the above, too. Because it's those dots are really getting thick in you know in Europe on my site.
Yeah. Well, at least you've had a visit from today from Holland and Germany.
Yes. And
yeah, well, that's great.
It's been a tremendous experience meeting
and I don't think it's bad considering it's the first one. You know.
Oh,
right.
No. It's just a trial run, really, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I had no idea what was going to happen. You know, I just made the offer to hold, to you know, to be here and to have this, and we'll see what happens. I'm sure
we're very grateful to you.
I'm sure it'll pick up as we progress.
For thinking about us.
That's okay.
And I think, you know, as you say, if we have a discussion amongst ourselves, on this side of the pond and think of some subject, we can let you know and sort of air it on the talk show.
Hey, this is Les. Do I have a chance before you're let go?
Yeah, how you doing,
hello?
Les?
Les is
a Canadian. He's not a real European. No,
well, I'm a Canuck, and I still remember the British Ensign, our real Canadian flag, before they gave us this red and white communist crap in 1968 or 9 under Pearson.
Yes, we remember it too.
Okay, good.
I understand
like when Trudeau brought home supposedly the Constitution, and it's like Canada really went to hell.
Yeah.
But I asked a few questions. It's like, and it's like the one or two times I've been on the chat, like live. I know you don't really notice the chat forum because it's like you know you're too busy talking. You're too concentrated on talking. So I thought I'd ask him again before you're gone.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
No, don't be. It's just the way it is. It's like now that I was. In that position once or twice too, it's like I totally understand why questions get lost, they're not answered. It's like you're too concentrated on with the guests and you know what you're talking already at hand, you know, before you know you look at the forum.
Yeah, it's become so distractive on the Friday and Saturday show sometimes that I just train myself not to look at it anymore.
Yeah, well, hopefully you know people don't get too angry and stuff that you know, their questions get lost. It's like maybe they'll get, you know, more active in the phone-in. It's like if they're really die-hard to find out what they want.
Yeah, well, that's why I do the Monday program, and you know, that's why I thought I'd do this one too.
Okay, one of the first questions I got is, what's your impression about Diana's death? David Icke has pretty much made it out to be it was a Masonic conspiracy and it was a ritual murder death.
Yeah, you know, it seems to me that there was something behind it. I don't doubt it.
There's
definitely somebody involved. But as far as I'm concerned, she's a whore and she deserved it. And it couldn't have happened at a better time because she's a race mixer. And if Yahweh used evil people to do his judgment, well, then that's good.
One of the things that's left out that, the peaceniks that the hippie types have put out, it's like they don't know anything about all this other stuff. It was like Princess Diana was going worldwide. She was against all the landmines that Britain was producing in all sorts of countries.
and that's what got her in trouble and maybe put a murder mark on herself.
Don't you think that's really a fringe issue, the landmine thing?
It might. I don't know. It's like that might be big business. I don't know.
I always saw that as like some kind of loony liberal fringe issue. I never saw that as being really important. I mean, I could be wrong, but.
Her like being linked and maybe eventually marrying an Arabian, you know, like somebody out of a royal bloodline, that definitely would cause it. But, you know, once you start stepping on toes and infringing on, Brits' money-making industries, it's like, oh, yeah, I can see that. Especially if there's a lot of money behind that and it's worldwide.
I think for people who knew her, there was no question of race mixing. She was friendly with that fella, but she wasn't planning to marry him. And there certainly wouldn't have been any sexual import at all with her, because she wasn't that sort of a person. You see, all that people know about her really is what the media have said. And as we've said over and over again, they have an agenda. It's not the same one as ours. And so I don't believe for one moment that she was even contemplating a mixed marriage. In fact, there's plenty of evidence of what she told her friends. Much as she would have loved to have had a child with her own husband, another child, in the hopes that it would be a daughter, he had said definitely there would be no more children for her. And she told her friends, she said, I would love to have had a little girl. But she said, I couldn't give my boys a brother or a sister like another one of her friends got, who married the cricketer. Of course, we know what that was. That was a mixed marriage. So you see, but the media won't tell you this because they have another agenda.
Well, you know, I would suggest that maybe you, if you wanted to, you could write up a little something and we'll put it on the site. Yeah, you know, we'll put it on the forum.
Yeah, it's a very sad case because so many people, you know, they love Diana. It's like it's like everyone had a crush on her. She's perfect from everything we saw and heard.
A beautiful woman too, and it's a shame she married that kike Charles.
That's another thing in itself. It's like, you know, Charles is supposed to be like very Welsh, and it's like just because of that makes him Jewish.
No, it comes down through the Mountbatten line.
Yes.
On his father's side.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I don't want to get in an argument, but it's like, I've heard this argument before that the royal line is, you know, from Mountbatten and it's Jewish, and it's like, what if this is just a big con job just to, like, destroy, you know, the British royalty, which is what the Jews want to do?
Why would the Jews want to destroy it? They've run it.
Because it's the line of David. It's the royal line.
Yes.
They've had pretty good control over it for a long time.
We do have the facts about the bloodline, and it cannot be disputed.
Yeah, I don't want to fall into this David Icke, conspiracy, alien, satanic seed line stuff that he proposes.
No.
Well, he's just a freak, all right? He's just an idiot. And I have no respect for David Icke at all, and I'll debate with him anytime.
Like, I've seen one video that came, like a bootleg video that came from supposedly inside the Windsor Castle, and it showed this transformation, and I'm like, okay, this is kind of weird. And they're like, yeah, this is them turning into a lizard. I'm like, this looks more like satanic possession. This doesn't look like a lizard.
Clifton Emmerheiser did a pretty good article on historical article on the Battenberg bloodline.
Okay. Oh, is that on the site?
Yeah, it's on. It's in the teaching letters. I don't know.
I remember that. It was good.
But it was superb.
If you go to his site, she actually married a A Polish Jew, wasn't it? A Polish Jew from Warsaw.
Yes.
You got to be Poland, don't you?
Well, you know, Napoleon had put this guy into this position in Warsaw, and he was a Jew. The Von
Hoff. It was a morganatic marriage as well.
And it wasn't, the Battenbergs were never supposed, the results of this marriage were never supposed to be considered royalty. And they actually, about 10 years after the marriage, they had the status changed. And you know how that happens. And they were elevated to royalty. And it wasn't supposed to be that way by the original terms of the marriage.
Before I forget, guest 27 mentioned in the chat a book called Symbols of Our Celto-Saxon Heritage by H.H. Bennett. I think it's W.H. Bennett. But it's by Ben anyway, and you can get it from the British Israel World Federation, and it's like it's a really great book on heraldry and showing the lineage of ancient Israel to contemporary nations.
Right, and you know a lot of Robert Balakaius has done a lot of good work with heraldry in some of his books, and I think E. Raymond Capp did some books on heraldry. But I don't give heraldry – I mean, heraldry is important to the race, okay? But I don't think that we could take anybody's family heraldry and make any definitive proofs from it, only because it's been borrowed so many times.
Yeah, I've heard or read that the Rothschilds have ripped off their heraldry from other places and look themselves like they are European.
You know, the Battenberg, yeah, right. They've actually ripped off heraldry. And the Battenbergs, their original family shield is a red circle. It's a red wagon wheel on a white background.
It's very appropriate.
Now, who does that sound like? I mean, they're Rolling Stones. They're Wandering Jews is what they are. That ain't no... A red wagon wheel. They're gypsies. That's not a Israelite heraldry.
Presumably, the Battenberg, House of Battenberg, it was extinct and it was revived to give this Jewish some importance because her husband who married her was disowned by the Tsar at the time because of this marriage.
Right. Let me tell the story real quick. There's a prince of Hesse named Louis. Okay? He's a good German prince. He has a son who's not his oldest son. He's not the heir to the principality of Hesse. He's his second son. And I think his name was Philip. Okay? I'm not positive, but I think his name was Philip. Well, anyway, this second son is promised that he would marry one of the Tsar's daughters, the Russian Tsar. Okay? So on his way to Russia, he gets to Russia and he don't like it there and he takes off and he hits Warsaw and he finds this Jewish whore and he marries her. And basically that's what happened. She's one of the artificial nobles that were planted by Napoleon in his conquests. Okay? So this is what happens. His father gets all upset with him and basically disinherits him because he went back on what, you know, the deal was, and he didn't marry the Tsar's daughter. He married this Jewess from Warsaw, okay? And he's disinherited by his father, but when his father dies, his brother becomes the Prince of Hesse. And his brother feels sorry for him, and his brother takes this old, extinct county that, you know, the Count of, and makes his brother the Count of Battenberg, okay, which was an extinct seat. It was, you know, the family line, the real Battenberg family line died out. So he makes his brother the Count of Battenberg. And his part of the deal, and he does this so that his brother has a family income because that's the way it works. So part of the deal was that his wife, the Polish Jew, would never be recognized as a noble But then 10 years later, something, you know, political happened, and they decide to recognize her. And they decide to recognize the children. So all of a sudden, they're nobles, right? And that's who the Battenbergs descend from. And they're not nobles, but the Princess Elizabeth of England marries one. Because they, you know, they left Germany, they go to England, and they change their name to Mountbatten. And that was Lewis Mountbatten, who becomes Lord Mountbatten in Britain after the first, or during or after the First World War. And Lord Mountbatten's son is Prince Philip, and he's got this Polish Jewess's blood in him, in his veins, and he marries Queen Elizabeth. Or Princess Elizabeth at the time.
Well, he wasn't Mountbatten's son. He was the son of the prince in Greece. He's
Oh, okay. Mountbatten's. But, okay, I thought he was Louis Mountbatten.
No, this Louis Mountbatten, who was an army
man. He was a nephew.
Well, I have a testimony of a man in this village where I live who was a soldier. And he said, for him to address the company of soldiers at one time during the last war, you know, the 39-45 war, he said, as ordinary field soldiers, he says, we were disgusted with his language. He said it was more gutter-like than anything that any so ordinary soldier had spoken. So that is what I know about Lord Louis Mountbatten.
Okay. Well, the Battenbergs actually
did spread.
His
wife was a Jewess. Edwina was a Jewess.
Mm-hmm.
That's Lord Louis' wife.
Edwina?
The Battenbergs did spread through all the royal families of Europe. They married into a bunch of them. And Clifton's paper shows that, and you should read it. But I thought, that it was a simpler relationship between Philip and Lewis Mountbatten. But yeah, you could be right. I'm not really a student of the situation.
Okay, before we totally get off this, so how accurate is David Icke with the bloodlines going all throughout Europe and everyone looks the same? Because I've seen pictures in his book of like princes and kings from Russia, Poland, England, and a lot of them look similar. It's like they're almost like identical twins.
Well, right, because they're all related. But the Jews, over the last 100 years, have gotten into a lot of those royal lines.
It was always said that Victoria put a princess on every throne in Europe, because the Tsar's wife was one of her daughters.
Mm-hmm.
Greece had one of her daughters. Spain had one of her daughters. Germany had a daughter. And so it was. And that is why there's the physical resemblance between all of these families.
Hmm. Okay, while we're still on the royalty issue, is Irish Gaelic, is it like Welsh? Is it almost totally similar to Welsh, like Hebrew?
You've got two basic groups of Celtic speech, you know, in the British Isles. You've got the Brythonic, which is the Welsh, and then you've got the Gaedhol, which is the Gaelic, and they're fairly different from each other, although they're very closely related. Basically, the Brythonic was the original one and is the closest to Hebrew. But then you have the Gaelic, which was an offshoot of the Bill, mentions about there was people who came out of Egypt before the Exodus, the Zara Judah and the people who built Troy. And there was a group who actually came to Scotland via Spain. That's where because in the meantime, their language would have changed because of their interchange with, other races in the Mediterranean. And they were on a different route, so that's why their language is
slightly different.
That's what we were discussing like a week ago. Like I was asking, because I've always been under the impression that the Tribe of Dan, because they escaped the curses, the slavery of the 40 years in Egypt, and they went to Ireland. That's why they've, you know, Ireland's always been cursed, because they didn't partake of, you know, the tribulation of the rest of the tribes. It's like they tried to escape it, and they just made it worse on themselves.
No, I don't know where you got that version from, because I can't say anything like that.
Yeah, I know. You sort of proved to me that a lot of tribes of Dan were still there in Palestine after the Exodus.
Yeah, it's all over the Old Testament.
But, yeah, this is like from obscure references. It's like I should have written everything down back at the time when I was making all these theories. But, you know, has anyone ever felt like that over there?
Felt like what?
That Ireland has a curse on themselves?
I don't ever say that.
Think.
The curse of Ireland is the same curse that suffered the rest of us, is the Jews in England that have been wanting to destroy Ireland and the Irish. That's the way I look at that. It's the Jewish merchants that put the English up to most of the oppression of Ireland. The early Anglo-Saxon writers wrote very well about the Irish.
Yeah. And, I've got it. William the Conqueror, William the Plunderer, as they called him, he had a lot of Jews in his retinue. And that's when the Cheta law came to England and usury started. That's why they made a record of all the properties in England, so they could be taken over by the state and could be taken in lieu of debts.
Right.
The Doomsday Book.
Well, whenever you see people start registering things, you know the Jews are behind it, and they're looking to get their greedy hands on it.
Well, actually, legally, if you register something, you're handing over ownership.
Right.
So in reality, when you register your house, you're giving it over. So they charge you rent in the guise of council taxes or what, I don't know what they call it.
Yeah, I've read in America when you register, like when you patent anything, it's like it doesn't necessarily get back to you. It's like people can still rip you off and steal your ideas and merchandise whatever you produce because somebody over there at the patent office gave away your idea.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, or made sure it didn't see the light of day, especially if it was to the Jews' disadvantages like these. I mean, you hear about all these cheap patents for, not cheap, all these patents for, you know, cheap energy, you know. And there was a lot of Tesla stuff that got didn't see the light of day where you could, he devised a method, I believe, where you could sort of get pull electricity out of the ether, you know, for nothing.
Tesla had to be a man of God.
It basically boils down to you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
Yeah.
It's just incredible that Tesla technology is not used. You know, and it's like this, you know, the world will be improved 100% overnight, probably.
Oh, yes.
Well, the reason it's not used, it would harm the oil men. After all, they're the ones who are supposed to be making the money. And they do. And they have.
And I'd like you to be hooked up at your house to the power station, you know, to get the power from them. They wouldn't like you to be independent and bypass them, because if they got control of energy, they got control of you.
And, of course, all this talk now, there's quite a bit of talk in England about electric cars. Well, if they're going to do away with the oil, well, they're going to have you hooked onto the electricity, because they own that as well. So you cannot win.
Well, I would just wish that, you know, one of our own kind would, like, you know, one of our millionaires would just, like, start building, you know, Tesla coils, Tesla batteries, you know, to power whatever people wanted. And it's like, you know, that would pretty much be the end of the electrical power industry as we know it, and it's like, you know, we can finally get, you know, our legs up and we can get out of debt.
It would be a wonderful dream, but the authorities, they would soon find a bomb to drop on that, irrespective of how many people are hurt, because they have their masters as well. We might have our dreams, but the authorities have their masters. They're the ones pulling the strings. And we've got to just be subservient to them until the Lord of Glory comes. And then they'll be put into their place. Because I'm sure that Yeshua and Yahweh, they've got the energy that created this earth and all the wonders. And they'll be back into action, I believe, when he returns.
Yes, he will be.
Well, yeah, praise Yahweh, but it's like, you know, us that, you know, it's like I don't pray that much. It's like I'm just a regular guy.
You don't have to pray that much.
Well, you know what? I was just thinking about this for the past week. You know, I really am a dummy. It's like I seem to be praying when I'm in a lot of fear, and it's like I see a lot of spooky things in the corner of my eye.
Well, all you really
like,
have to pray for is that the
like
will of
things
Yahweh
that
be done in
can't
the earth.
Be explained.
It all boils down to the will of Yahweh is done in the earth. That's what it boils down to.
Yes.
Well, yeah, for the past week, everything's been like hunky-dory, you know. It's like, you know, once you cut down your television intake, your beer, alcohol, whatever you want to call it, for those people who probably do drugs, I guess, still. It's like I cut drugs out of my life years and years ago, but it's like once you start having a proper mind, you know, things get revealed to you.
That's quite true, honey. I haven't had a television for 40 years, and nobody can believe it. But I tell you, you can read, you can learn. The Lord opens your eyes and your heart to many truths. But of course, if you glued to that square box, you won't learn anything except what the authorities want you to know.
Did you read what I put on the front page of my website about something that Clifton took out of the book of Adam and Eve a long time ago about television?
No way.
Oh, yes.
Is this out of, like, the hidden books of Adam and Eve? Or?
I'm going to read this. We have plenty of time. I mean, we can make this a four-hour show. I got this on the front page of Christogenia, but I never got any comments on it. It has 77 reads. I mean, that's not a lot, but it ain't bad. This is Clifton's words now. There will probably be those who scoff at any reference to the three books of Adam and Eve, but it should be pointed out from the start that the first, second, and third books of Adam and Eve are mostly allegorical and prophetic in nature, and cannot be taken in a literal sense. If they are taken at their face value, less than 5% of it can be comprehended. I will give you an example of such a case. In the 27th chapter of the first book of Adam and Eve, we read the following. When Satan, the hater of all good, saw how they continued in prayer, meaning Adam and Eve, and how God communed with them and comforted them, and how he had accepted their offering, Satan made an apparition. He began with transforming his hosts. In his hands was a flashing fire, and then they were in a great light. And he placed his throne near the mouth of the cave, because he could not enter into it by reason of their prayers. And he shed light into the cave, until the cave glistened over Adam and Eve, while his hosts began to sing praises. And Satan did this in order that when Adam saw the light, he should think within himself that it was a heavenly light, and that Satan's hosts were angels. Now tell me that doesn't describe TV and all the bastards inside it. And that God had sent them to watch at the cave and to give him light in the darkness. Now doesn't that sound like some fat old white guy sitting on his couch watching that TV at night with his wife?
Yeah.
So that when Adam came out of the cave and saw them, and Adam and Eve bowed to Satan. That's star fever. They love movie stars and TV stars. and they kiss their asses all the time. Oh, look, it's Alex What's-His-Face. Now, Adam and Eve saw the light, fancying that it was real, and they strengthened their hearts. Yet as they were trembling, Adam said to Eve, look at that great light and those many songs of praise. When I read that, I think of a Bob Hope TV special. And that host standing outside that do come in to tell us, do not tell us what they say, whence they come, or what is the meaning of this light, what those praises are, wherefore they have been sent here, and they do not come in.
Yeah,
and
but
that's television. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but
that's,
you know,
television.
Our fathers never thought that like that about Bob Hope. It was just like a good time, you know, one night, you know.
This is so damn good. It's television. It's written. It's you know, you can't prove that the Book of Adam and Eve is scriptural. But
but it's like when you read those lost books of Eve and Adam, the forgotten books of the Bible, it's like, okay, a lot of people say, oh, this is non-scriptural. This is, you know, first, second, third century written. But the way it's written and the way it's like poetry, it's like, this is so real. It's like, this has to be true. This is like, they've been given, you know, wisdom from Yahweh that it's like, this is the way it was. And it was never written down almost.
Well, this writing existed 2,000 years ago, there's no doubt. And that sounds just like television. And they could, there's no way they knew about television 2,000 years ago.
No, but the effects are exactly like what we're seeing today.
Exactly. That's exactly television. It's exactly what they've done.
They see people portrayed on that screen and they believe they're real.
Right.
And when you tell them it's only a story, oh, they're convinced. They know the people.
Well, you know,
I come up against that every day.
Well,
check this out. I know he's a Jew. I know he ain't no good. I know that George Norrie is an Arab. He's not any good.
George Norrie, for their talk show?
Yeah, right. And I'm talking about Coast to Coast. One night.
Yeah,
I listen
to that. They always have some interesting information once in a while.
Well, yeah, but a lot of it's whacked out and a lot of it's misleading. And I used to listen to it for entertainment value sometimes in prison. And one night I'm listening to William Shatner. And he's talking to
him. Well, he's a Jew.
I know he's a Jew. That's why I said that. I know he's no good. But I'm listening to William Shatner talk about Star Trek.
He's on WWE Raw this Monday.
To George Norrie. And it's one devil talking to another devil. I have no doubt about that. But, you know, they're having a serious conversation about Star Trek. And William Shatner very seriously, and he really meant it, said that he used to do these appearances and people would come up to him and ask him what all those places were like that he visited.
Oh, because they thought it was real.
Incredible.
That they thought it was real. And there are people in the world that think that everything they see on that damn television is real.
Well, yeah, it's when crazy. I was 7 years old, yeah, sure.
It's really crazy that's the way they're raised and that's how they're bred up. And I, you know, when Shatner said that, you know, I can't stand him, but I kind of believe that. That there were really people in the world that would ask him, hey, how are those Klingons really that ugly, you know?
Well, hey, as long as we've got Brits on the line, I got a million questions. It's like, what's the impression about Stonehenge? For years we've been hearing that hippies and peaceniks and social communists have, you know, been banned from attending Stonehenge. There's like a fence around it now. No one's allowed to go up and touch the stones anymore.
Oh, yes, that's right. It's like all our ancient history. So it's just the means of the enemy sort of pressing them, getting them associated with hippies and all sorts of weird groups. But in fact, you know, it's one of our most, I think, precious monuments. And also, numerically, it's tied up with a great pyramid, I think, is one of these great monuments that was set up by our forefathers, you know, the patriarchs.
And it had to have supernatural power. from the father, because men in our day and age couldn't move those stones. They didn't have the hydraulic equipment that we know. So you see, these are the proofs that Yahweh was involved with this. These people were empowered by him to build these monuments. And it's not just Stonehenge. There are like monuments all around in the country, and quite a few in Europe as well. Maybe not so big, but the same design.
Well, there was a TV special in the 1990s, and they show this eccentric man in Florida who was rebuilding a castle that he imported stones from Britain, and it's like they showed this clip and nobody could believe it, and it's like it's never been seen since or mentioned since, but things were being moved like teleportically. I don't know what's the word to describe it, but it's like it seemed like it was all, you know, these big, huge, massive stones are being moved invisibly, and it's like,
levitated.
You know, a lot of people, like, you know, started to just, you know, ascribe that to Satanism and Jimmy Page and his estate, Borns Olsteen or whatever they call it, and it's like a lot of these things are all tied in together.
Well, the original things that were built, Satan didn't do anything that was good. He didn't do anything that was useful. He's only been a destroyer from the beginning. So anything that was created originally was created by Yahweh. And he used our forebears to do these, the ancient patriarchs. I mean, there's so much evidence about Job and Enoch being involved in these things. But you see, as saying it was stones from Britain, there are quite a few buildings in Britain were sold to Americans, and they were dismantled stone by stone and transported to America so that they could be built up. Now, whether any of them were so huge they needed extra power, well, I don't know about that. But the point is, these castles were built in Britain, and our cathedrals, if you've ever been, seen some of the wonderful cathedrals, well, they were built, and they didn't have all the wonderful inventions that we've been able to employ, but they got them built. They had their means, and they were built for the glory of God. Chris could help you to understand a little bit about that, how they were built, the stonemasons who did the work.
So you don't think about supernatural structures, like supposedly the Tower of Babel that had eight sides and was like almost a mile thick to prevent the flood from destroying themselves? I've read that in James Wickstrom's books in the past, that a lot of things in the past have been hidden from us, and it's like it's in very rare materials that we ever find any of this memory.
When you read the story of the Tower of Babel, it's very debatable whether it was a physical building. It was a system. We have it, the system of Babylon here today, just the same as that Babel was. And the Lord said he came down and he destroyed their language, because their language was going to be in our day and age, or just maybe before some of our day, they invented another worldwide language, which I'm sure you might have heard of, Esperanto. It never took off.
Well, no, that language is kind of popular from what I found out from, like, anti-racist people.
Yeah.
Like, they're trying to push it, like, everywhere I go, wherever they...
Yes, they would like to push it, but it's against God's will, because God said that he gave the people his language. The people that were inhabiting the earth, but their plan was to overcome Yahweh and build a society for themselves. And that is why they were destroyed.
You know, there's a lot of history lost. And outside of the Mesopotamian inscriptions in the Bible, the Bible, you know, Isaiah the prophet lived about 750 B.C.
Yeah.
Moses wrote the Pentateuch about 1450 B.C.
Yeah, so 500 years lost at least.
According to the most valid Septuagint chronologies, the flood was about 3245 B.C. Now, the call of Abraham is about 2000 B.C. So right there, we have Moses is writing about the time, historically from the call of Abraham. And he records the time in Noah and the book of Genesis and things like that. But the real day-to-day history picks up at the time of Abraham, right? And the rest is just a general illustration.
I didn't want to bring this up with you before, but it's like, I guess this is a good time as ever.
Well, just let me finish first.
Okay.
Is what I'm trying to say is that from the time of the Tower of Babel event and the flood and Genesis chapters 10 and 11, and whatever's being described there is only described in two short chapters in Genesis, right? Until the time of Abraham is 1,200 years that we really don't have a whole lot about. And the first Greek writing, the first writing that appears outside of the Bible in the West, in Europe, isn't until the time of Homer, around 600 B.C. And he's writing about events from 1,200 B.C., the Trojan Wars. So from the time of the flood to the time of Homer is 2,400 years that we really don't have much about except for what's in the Bible and what's in the Mesopotamian inscriptions, and they're pretty thin. I mean, in reality, when you read them.
Okay, well, what about, you don't want to hear this name, David Icke, but also Pastor Wickstrom's work talking about Samaria, and it's like a lot of it relates to our history, and it's like a lot of it's been rewritten, and it was taken, by the priests and rewritten into, Hebrew history, Israelite history.
Well, that's a lie. It's not rewritten into Israelite history. What we have is we have inscriptions found in Sumer, and we have epic poetry. And things like the Gilgamesh story and Inanna's descent to the netherworld and stories about the gods and things like that. And some of them are very early. And Israelite history wasn't rewritten from that. Rather, they reflect a lot of the same things because they were simply a different branch of the same race. The Cushite we all descended from Noah. The Cushite Empire, the Empire of Nimrod, they were still Adamic people. They would have had the same stories, and in many cases they did. Those things we can't say the Bible was stolen from that. That's ridiculous because the Bible tells us how it was written. They had the same stories because they were a different branch of the same race.
Like, I just find it very aggravating.
And there's
it's like, I keep hearing for the last 10 years, it's like, well, there have been like 10, 20 crucified saviors in the world's history, and it's like Christianity ripped it all off from them.
Well, the earliest, no, actually, exactly the opposite has happened. Exactly, Krishna is a straight ripoff of the gospel. And you won't find, there's no archaeological providence for Krishna before the time of the spread of the gospel. None whatsoever. And the people that claim it, they're lying because they don't have the evidence dug out of the ground, so they're making it up. Now, the first ripoff of the Bible is found in Babylonia in the Neo-Assyrian Empire, and it's found after the 7th century B.C., okay? And it's the story of Nebuchadnezzar and how he was born of a virgin and floated down the river. And they're straight ripoffs from the Isaiah story, from the Isaiah prophecy that the Assyrians concocted. And you don't find them before the 7th century A.D. B.C. They don't exist in the old Akkadian literature and the old Sumerian literature. Now, all the stories about Semiramis and giving birth as a virgin to her son.
That's pretty much what everyone says Catholicism is based on.
Well, those stories don't exist until the Hellenic period. There's no providence whatsoever for any of those stories before the 4th century B.C. You won't find those stories in the ancient inscriptions. The people that make these claims simply don't know what the hell they're talking about. And David Icke is a straight clown. And if that's what
he doesn't look like a white man to me.
I've read ancient Near Eastern texts relating to the Old Testament.
Well, you know how to read Greek, so it's not even a matter of Greek.
It's a matter of picking up the ancient Near Eastern texts relating to the Old Testament. It's all the major Sumerian and Egyptian and Akkadian and Hittite and Canaanite inscriptions that relate in any way to the Bible that were collected at Princeton University and translated. 1969, Pritchard. And there's probably better books that have come out since, but they don't change so much anything that's groundbreaking. The Shemitic languages and what they mean are well known. And Zechariah Sitchin's a fraud, and David Icke's a fraud. And if that's who Wickstrom's following, well, that shows you what Wickstrom is. Because he shouldn't be following Sitchin and Icke.
I
would hope he's not.
Yeah, I haven't bought his lectures yet, so I don't know exactly what his sources are. But
all right, well, I hope he ain't using them, because they're clowns. If you actually read these inscriptions, you could tell that the Hebrew Bible was not copied from Sumerian culture, because the Hebrew Bible left all the bad behind, for the most part. I mean, there's a lot of screwed up things in those Sumerian inscriptions.
Yeah, but it's just kind of strange. It's like my uncle, it's more like legends, but it's like when I was growing up, my father taught me, about mermaids. It's like he described them in a different sense, but he would say that it's like, yeah, it's true. It's like ships would sail away and they would get crashed by, what we'd call sirens or mermaids and this and that. And then when recently in the last 5 years, it's like I look at Heike's work, and yeah, there are these strange creatures that are supposed to see that are half human, half fish. And there are gods in the very, very distant past that are these things. It's like, well, maybe there are these things. There are these demigods.
Well, I'm a kind of show me type of guy. Yeah, you know what I mean? The Greeks, they believed the gods laid the foundations of the temples, only because the temple foundations that they were using had been laid before the Greeks got there. Because those foundations were a lot older than the Greeks. And there's giant stone temples all over the Mediterranean that from a very early time. But like I said, we're missing about 2,400 years of our own history. So I don't claim to be able to make anything up that I haven't read in an old book. And I don't comment that, that the things were there before the Greeks there. Yeah, sure, the Greeks attest that they were. Who built them? I'm not gonna conjecture that, because it's only conjecture.
Yeah, and we only have like pseudo historians like Van Doniken to tell us.
Van Doniken, Graham Hancock, William Henry, David Icke, they're all clowns that capitalize on the unknown, that they're writing novels and calling it history. and Zechariah Sitchin, he's a straight liar. He came from Russia, got himself an office in Rockefeller Plaza, and published 12 books in no time at all.
Which is so, pretty surprising, because it's like he really made a huge impact in the 80s and 90s. Like, none of us knew of it, and it's like we read his books and we're like, wow.
Well,
this is info none of us ever knew before, and it's like it makes sense.
He doesn't know anything about Sumerian that you don't know. He's there's Michael Heiser is probably the most notable. There's several Hebrew scholars that have exposed Zechariah Sitchin as a straight fraud. And that's what he is. He's a fraud. And he was a Rockefeller shill. And he was probably financed as part of that great Jewish campaign that Bezhmenov describes, that the Soviet campaign to undermine Western culture. And Velikovsky's a part of it, and Ben Klassen's a part of it, and Zechariah Sitchin's a part of it, and all these other clowns that try to defraud Christianity are parts of it. And all of these so-called ancient stories were actually ripoffs of the Bible. The Bible's not a ripoff from them. The Greek philosophers and Mesopotamian philosophers was studying Hebrew scriptures long before even the time of Isaiah.
I'm just going to read a couple things out of the chat room here and then cut out. But it's like, since they're not phoning in or can't phone in, it's like maybe you want to address it. And it's like, you know, I got no problem with it. But, Dave UK, is all this really so-called knowledge necessary, though, and will it help us in our walk, or does it just bog us down our sophistry?
No, because when you learn how to answer all the clowns, then you're more steadfast in your faith. And you should know about ancient history.
Hey, guest 29, Wickstrom is a crazy nutcase.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't say that to my face. I'd pound him into the dirt.
Yeah, Dave UK, Jim Wickstrom has a powerful ministry once, but he lost it. Darn shame, really, but true. This guest 27, Ike Haywood Stitchin's All Jew Fiction.
Yes, they are.
W.K. Von Doniken is a Jew, I am told.
I wouldn't doubt it, but it don't matter to me. He's a liar. That's all that matters. Okay, mm-hmm. Let's wrap this up. It's 4 hours, and I love y'all, but it's
all right. Yeah, thanks for having me on. I'll talk to you later. Yahweh
okay,
bless.
I'll see you Friday.
Yahweh bless.
Yahweh bless.
Yahweh bless.
Yeah, my brothers and sisters in England and Matthew in Germany, I'm sorry you couldn't get in, and it's been enjoyable, and we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Yes,
Yahweh bless.
Look forward to that. Yahweh bless. Bye.
Yahweh bless.
Yahweh
bless. Fine. Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.